Welcome everybody to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 198, Final Countdown, and it's actually the final episode before E3. Unfortunately, John is not here tonight. We'll hear from him after the show because he's not going to be there physically at the show, so we'll probably hear from him after. But in his place, we have a very special guest, somebody I've been trying to get on the show for a while now, returning champion, my friend and yours, Billy Berghammer.
I was a champion?
Yeah. Oh, dude.
Interesting.
You own that N64 episode.
Yeah, and I apologize for the guys that I'm working with now. I'm not doing the E3 scheduling right now because I'm on this podcast. So there you go.
Damn straight. Hey, the man's got priorities. He's got loyalties. Age-old loyalties.
It's true.
Of course, I think probably most all of our listeners know who you are, Billy, where you come from, and what you do now, but let me just give the quick bio. You founded our website back in 1999 as Planet N 2000, and then, of course, it became Planet GameCube, and eventually you cursed me with your job as director of the website.
Sucker.
So, yes, I took over and yada, yada, yada. Now John's in charge, sort of. And and I do this podcast. And you, my good man, I'm so jealous. You have the coolest job. Like, if you went back and told me at 10 years old that I would be friends with the editor-in-chief of Electronic Gaming Monthly, I would have peed my pants.
It's kind of crazy.
It is so cool, man. That is amazing. I can't believe you're in charge of EGM. I mean, I can believe it. You're totally qualified, but it's just nuts. It's just nuts.
Backtracking.
I think it might be weirder than seeing you on TV. That was weird.
It's a lot different.
I never actually saw you on TV because I didn't have cable, so I saw you on my iPod sometimes. But
nice.
So give us a quick rundown. How's the new job going? How's the magazine shaping up? I mean, it's kind of an all new staff.
Yeah, it's in a nutshell, I mean, it's pretty crazy. I mean, there's a lot, you know, obviously timing, you know, I started this job a little over a month ago. I think it's just been a blur, you know, timing wise, you know, right before E3, it's a little rough, but you know, we're taking things in stride. Our second issue is on its way to subscribers now. You'll be able to pick it up at E3 if you're going to the show.
Awesome.
And that's the first issue that I'm involved with, but we've been kicking out new versions of EGMI, which is our digital magazine, and that you can see now at egmnow.com. That's been a fun venture too. We just unleashed the new tech with this issue that's up right now that you can go see.
It's a lot better.
It's a lot better, and that's actually a good sneak peek at what our iPad app is going to look like. So we're hoping to have that within couple weeks to a month. We'll see.
Now, EGM is kind of interesting. It's not something I don't think I've ever seen before, although maybe it's similar to The Escapist. I don't go to The Escapist, but I've heard that it might be similar to that. But it's kind of like a weekly thing, almost weekly, I guess, most weeks. But it's kind of like you could either look at it as like a snippet of a magazine issue, you know, like a kind of best of or a here's what we've got so far, or like a good gaming website. The covers for the entire week kind of smashed together and fed to you in this one giant dose.
Yeah, I mean, once we get rolling, it will be weekly. We had some technical issues. We really wanted to get the new version out, and that's what pushed it. You know, like there were a couple weeks that we were off, and plus we're really focusing on trying to get the iPad stuff together. So, yeah, there's going to be some stuff that we're going to share with the print magazine, but a lot of it's going to be completely unique new stuff. Mm-hmm. Plus we can take advantage of the digital format, so we can do audio, we can do music from games, we can have audio interviews,
video
content. You know, we're partnered with Area 5, the guys that did the 1UP show, so we're going to be doing some fun stuff with them at E3 that I'm really really excited about. Yeah, so it's very exciting. We're still building out the team. I'm going to be hiring a lot of people after E3.
So if you're listening to this at home and you want to work at EGM, show up at E3 with your resume.
Yes, and you'll see me running around crazy.
Find crazy Billy.
But yeah, no doubt, right? But no, it's really exciting. I'm really looking forward to showing everybody our new issue. I'm supposed to get one in my hands tomorrow, or this would be Friday, I guess. So, that I'm really excited about. I worked on Game Informer a little bit before the website launched. And so that was like my first print stuff. That was really exciting. And, you know, when I was freelancing, I did some other print stuff, but this is like the first book that I really had a lot of involvement in and really, you know, helped mold and craft with the team. And, you know, I'm proud of it. I'm really excited about it. And I'm excited for people to see what's on the cover and read the cover story and read the features and all kinds of stuff. So it's exciting.
Well, I know you're working with some people who are veterans of the print world. Are they kind of skeptical of this weird Nintendo website guy taking over their magazine?
You know, I've had is, you know, to be honest, I've just had a lot of encouragement and a lot of people that were really excited about the fact that I was involved. I was kind of curious myself, like what people would think, because I do come from a website background and, but I've been doing it long enough that I think people think that I can pull it off. And I'm leaning on Brady and the guys that have done print a lot more with the print side. And, you know, I can bring a lot to the table as far as EGMI is concerned.
Yeah, I would think that given the problems of doing print in this day and age, it could even be seen as a big bonus to have a guy with that more modern web-based philosophy taking that to print and kind of updating the medium.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like I'm really excited to see a lot of the magazines are coming back now and are even stronger than they were before. Game Informer now is amazing. Like I love what they're doing with their covers, and I just like their format. It's really good. John Davison's doing an amazing job with GamePro and completely rebooting that magazine. And I think, you know, what we're doing is going to be a lot different. We're going to have a unique space. So for the people that think print is dead, I have to disagree with them. You know, I mean, obviously I'm a little biased, but I like reading magazines. I like having paper in my hands. I also like seeing what we're going to be doing with the iPad stuff and checking out what, you know, the Wired app and seeing how Wired's doing it, and we're doing it differently. So it's fun. It's fun. It's unique. You know, I'm excited to the next couple of months to see it really get fleshed out with our new staff and everything else that we've got going on. So I kind of am looking forward to E3 just being over so I can get back to like the normal stuff.
Right.
But then again, I'm just excited for E3 for all the games and all the hoopla. It's kind of crazy. This is my 10th one.
I think this is my 10th as well, because the only year I've missed since 2000 was 07 when it was in Santa Monica. The totally fucked E3.
Yeah,
that's the one I missed.
That one
sucked
balls.
So I don't feel too bad about that. All right, well, we've got a lot more E3 talk coming up later in this episode. So real quick, before we get into games for new business, I mean, this is literally new business for you, so that's why I wanted to kick off with it. But you've also been on the Weekend Confirm podcast quite a bit. Now, I don't know if all of our listeners are familiar with this, but this is Garnet Lee's new podcast with Shack News. And of course, Garnet, I call him the Podfather. I mean, that's horrible. He was the host.
Oh, my God.
I stole that joke from Ricky Gervais, by the way, but Garnet started One Up Yours.
It doesn't make it any better.
No, it's terrible. but hey, if Snoop Dogg did it, so can I. Anyway, Garnet started One Up Yours, of course, and then that later became Listen Up. So Garnet's one of my heroes, and it's been a real trip listening to you. I mean, you're not, I don't know if you're a regular, you're kind of like the Steve Martin of 1970s SNL. You
it's
know,
whenever
like,
Shane doesn't show up.
Which is every week.
Every week, yeah.
He's our John Lindemann.
Yeah, no, I love being on that show. Those guys are great. You know, I love Garnett, and when I'm on with Jeff and Brian Leahy, who used to work for me at G4. It's fun, you know. I don't have a problem bullshitting about games. You know, I do it all the time anyway. So if I'm on a microphone or on TV or whatever, like I love talking games.
And you have a long history of being in front of a microphone anyway. You got your start in radio production back in the 90s, right? Even before you started at our site.
Yeah. Yep. I did radio for 10 years, a little over 10 years.
So it's old hat for you.
Now it's like come full circle, you know. I get to talk about games on podcasts and whatever, so it's fun.
It's you're no longer covering the N64 launch at 2 a.m. in Minneapolis.
Nope.
So I know too much about you, Billy.
It's true.
So in the midst of all of this crazy stuff going on, have you been playing any games lately that you can talk about? I assume, I mean, we always hear about the print deadlines and everything, so I assume that you get to see a lot of, at least in the past few weeks, you've gotten to see a lot of games that haven't even been announced yet, especially with E3. Have you played anything that you can talk about?
Well, you know, I'm still playing games for review, so like, I'm playing Tiger right now for Wii and 360 and PS3, which I like a lot.
And the Wii version is the best, right?
Well, I haven't delved into the 360 or PS3 one yet, so I started with the Wii one just because I liked the Wii one in the past. And this one, it's really a lot of fun. Like, they're doing a lot with Wii Motion Plus that I like. I like and I don't like. Like, I haven't finished the review yet, so I really don't want to, like, give any, like, final verdict. But if you have last year's version, one thing to consider for this year's version is they added miniature golf. And I know that sounds silly, that would be, like, the one real reason to get it. But I'm having so much fun playing mini golf. And, like, I think EA has got a good starting point with this one. And I think that there's a lot of things that they need to tweak and add to it. But the mini golf is actually a lot of fun. It's really cool. I'm also pretty impressed with how robust their online setup is for how awesome the Wii is for online games. I mean, if you want to play this game online, there's a lot to it. I mean, I'd say EA seems to be the most advanced third party online, you know, Wii player right now.
I don't think you need the third party caveat.
I also finished, I've already blasted through Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker. I finished that review this week as well. And if you're thinking about getting rid of your PSP, or I think the PSP's dead, you know, this is one game left that you definitely have to play. If you're a Metal Gear fan, it's the sequel to 3, which is one of the best in the series. Some people say that it's the best.
The best.
I liked 4 better than 3, but I just think the reason I do, and I'm going to, let me justify this, I think it's a miracle.
Yes, because you got flown out to Japan to review it before it came out.
No, and that's technically not correct, but I mean, it is kind of correct, but it wasn't for review purposes. But anyway, I liked 4 better than 3 just because it's a miracle that Kojima could wrap up all the crazy bullshit that he had in all of the games and kind of make it sense. Like,
but he kind of wrapped it up by piling more bullshit on top of it.
Welcome to Metal Gear, you know. I mean
is Peace Walker, like, I thought 3 had one of the more coherent stories of the series. I mean, does Peace Walker kind of maintain that, or is it still just as kooky?
It's a lot more coherent than the rest of his games. The co-op is amazing. Like, to be totally honest, like, I've had more fun playing Peace Walker co-op than a lot of cooperative games. Like, it's some of the best cooperative experiences I've had on any platform. Mm-hmm. And sadly, it's on a portable. Like, this is a game where if they decided to do like a director's cut, or like what Rockstar does with their Grand Theft Auto titles and bringing them to like the PS2 or bringing it to a console after the PSP,
the Wii would make more sense, don't you think? PS2's that's over.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they could just do it as a download title.
Okay.
I'd like to see them do that, because there's just a lot of, I mean, don't get me wrong, playing it on the PSP I think is fine, like, but there's a lot of things about this game that just don't really make it portable, so it's not really snackable. There's the cutscenes you can't pause, like, there's just a lot of gameplay elements that are just really, really long, and if you're getting on a bus or on a train or something like that, it defeats the purpose of having a portable game.
Yeah.
That being said, like, it's pretty awesome. If you're a Metal Gear fan, you have to play this game. Like, it's really, really good.
Well, we'll see if Sony slashes the price on their hardware at E3. I'm in the market for a PSP, but, you know, not at the current pricing levels.
I don't know if now would be the right time to buy a PSP, just to be honest. Like, it's kind of at its end of its life cycle, and there's so many rumors.
And if the price was dropped accordingly.
I mean, well, they have, actually. If you've looked at the deals that are lately on the go, and I think the main system, too, like, you can get some pretty sweet deals, but I don't know. There's too many rumors about the fact that there's going to be a new PSP this year.
Right. If that's backwards compatible, maybe I'll just go straight to that.
It'd be pretty rad. That would be a smart move on their part. Yeah, so that's kind of what I've been, you know, a lot of new games. I've seen a lot of stuff that's going to be at E3 that I'm not really allowed to talk about yet.
But Nintendo doesn't really, I mean, Nintendo's like the one company that really doesn't do fuck for pre-E3 stuff, right? I mean, they don't show anything.
They haven't done pre-E3 stuff for a long time.
Like, I've been to their pre-E3 stuff a few years ago, but it's like games that you already know are going to be there. So there may be like a preview embargo on it, but it's not like you can't say what you saw there. But I mean, they're not going to have like some secret event where they show off the 3DS to a select group of journalists before the press conference.
No, everybody's holding their big guns for E3. And mm-hmm. Now that E3 is back to its former glory, where everybody does their holy shit megaton announcements, you know, the pre-E3 events were a lot of stuff that people already know about.
All right. Well, so you're still with everybody else as of this recording, at least.
Yeah. I mean, everything starts Sunday.
Cirque du Soleil on Sunday.
Woot.
As you, as our listeners at home download this episode, we will probably be huddled around TYP's TV watching the catastrophe Cirque du Soleil thing.
Oh my God.
Hey, you know, E3 it's back to the big show, so everybody wants to have the spectacle and it's got to look awesome on TV. And
I know, but see, I'm more in the 2008.
You'll have the circus on Sunday, but then you'll only be 2 days removed from two separate wrestling on the floor of the show, plus a UFC match. I don't see why you're upset.
I hope Ubisoft pays tribute to the classic Activision booths by setting up a half pipe for Sean White to snowboard and or skateboard up and down during the show. Snowboarding especially would be pretty amazing.
Inside.
Oh,
in
yeah.
LA.
Anyway, we're going to move on. My new business will be extremely quick. I've only been playing Galaxy 2 and God of War 3, both of which I kind of briefly mentioned last week. And I don't have much more to say about them. I think they're both totally awesome. Maybe I might have some more detailed comments when I finish them and I can kind of put it all in perspective. So, James, you're up next.
So, I am continuing to be brutalized by the games I discussed last week.
This guy, yeah. Schwarzkopf with penguins.
In a second attempt to alleviate the suffering caused by Disgaea DS, I made another poorly timed decision and acquired Mega Man Zero Collection for the DS.
Yes, famously easygoing games.
What a cakewalk.
A game I felt, well, I beat this in 2002. What do I have left to prove?
They should package it with Klonoa.
So,
they have easy modes now, though.
They do have an easy mode, which lets you play the entirety of all four games in one singular chain, which...
Weird.
I'm not sure why the easy mode is featured that way. But, yeah, those games are hard. I mean it's kind of an understatement. They're just brutal.
But they're hard in a way I can get behind, because they're skill-based.
Yeah.
It's not like your RPGs where you have to grind for 50 hours, and it's not like you're racking your brain trying to figure out, what am I doing wrong here? It's like, if you die, it's your fault, you know why. You might think the level design's cheap, but you can see how you're supposed to get through there.
Yeah, so I sat down with Mega Man Zero, the original game that I beat back in like 03 today, thinking, okay, I could take this. I'm not that bad. Holy crap, I got rocked. Just brutalized. I was thinking to myself, what in the hell am I doing wrong? And first I blamed the port, because it is kind of a lazy port.
Really?
Yeah, so they didn't up-res anything. So there's these black bands around it. I mean, they're small, but there are black bands around the image. The bottom screen is artwork stills related to the characters you're currently interacting with. So it's just a still image of Zero standing there with his sword staring at you. Which is a little bit weird. But there was an issue with those games where, because the GBA only had two face buttons and you had two weapons plus jump, they mapped the third weapon to the R trigger. Mm-hmm. So by default, you had to hold down the R trigger and press the attack button to use your secondary weapon, but you could change it so the R trigger fired your secondary weapon.
You can also change it so that R switches the weapon that's activated by B.
Well, DS has four buttons. And they did not adapt to using the other two buttons. They just duplicate the efforts of the first two buttons.
So it's almost like emulated.
It is. No, it really is like it's emulated. It's really bizarre.
That's not so enticing.
No, it's not.
How do you think the graphics hold up? Because, I mean, the Zero games on GBA, they used this kind of pre-rendered thing that was... It had this resurgence in the GBA era, it seemed like, where a lot of action games especially were going the pre-rendered route.
I mean, they don't compare to some of the high-end stuff on the DS. But, I mean, they're not bad. They are good by GBA standards. There's nothing wrong with that on a 2D side-scroller. It looks about as good as any other 2D Mega Man game.
Right.
It's a little bit weird on the XL, though, because the screen is so massive that I can see individual pixels. But on a normal DS, that probably wouldn't be an issue. Really, if you've not played the Zero games, because I can't imagine all of our listeners have played or remember what they are.
No. Yeah, I didn't play any of them. But now I've kind of gone back and got into Mega Man. I'm really interested in picking this up.
I think this would be good for you, Greg.
I was a disturbed Mega Man fanboy for about 10 years. So when they announced the Zero games, they basically said, yeah, this is going to be a return to form from the early X games, in terms of difficulty.
Oh, well, it is that.
Yeah. So I remember thinking, oh, that's really exciting. So basically what they did was they took the Zero character out of the Mega Man X franchise, who uses a sword Mm-hmm. And they added RPG elements.
They gave him a gun, but the gun kind of sucks.
The gun sucks massively. Or the sword is overpowered. I'm not sure which one. And then they basically gave him his own games. I mean, they feel like Mega Man games with some RPG elements and pain. That's pretty much how I can describe the series. So if that sounds appealing, okay, you got four games on one DS cart.
I would say that I think the Mega Man Zero games are totally a precursor of the action part of Henry Hatsworth.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yeah, the climbing on the walls, the using the mostly melee attacks with occasional range weapon stuff, the level of difficulty, the way the enemies and the levels are kind of put together in ways that kill you. Yeah, yes. I think you take the puzzle stuff out of Henry Hatsworth, it plays like Mega Man Zero 5. So if you like that stuff, check it out. But it's
I could be all over that.
Equally brutal.
Yeah,
at least.
It's four games of this.
Yeah.
If you make it to the end without playing the easy mode, you have a problem.
Okay, well, Greg, you're going to wrap up New Business with Rotozoa, a.k.a.
You want me to say it?
Oh, yes.
Say it.
I can't get it out with a straight face.
Penta Tentacles. Yes.
Oh, Europe.
This is the art style game that America doesn't have yet.
No, we do have it.
I didn't think so.
Well, okay, you know, I might be wrong about that. Maybe I was just watching a video of it last week.
It's almost like playing it.
I've befuddled. You know, I got that sense from watching it. It looks so simple in the gameplay. And it wasn't a trailer. It was like somebody in Europe had downloaded it and put up a video of themselves playing it. And I thought, this looks too simple. This looks boring.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, having played a fair bit of it now over the past week, it is very simple. Certainly, it's a lot of the content that you're going to play to start with is very simple. So you kind of start off and you've got the so-called stage mode of it, where you can either play, so they're kind of like different difficulties. You can play with a two-tentacled microbe, three or four. And so what you're doing in each case is each tentacle is a different color. You've got to sort of snag other tiny little like electroplankton-looking creatures of the same color to lengthen that tentacle. If it hits the wrong part of you, then you take a hit and you've got a little sort of life meter that'll go down. It's game over if you die, obviously. So the more tentacles you've got to work with, the more different colors you've got to work with, the harder it's going to be. So you've got you've got that sort of choice of how hard you want to play straight off the bat, but you don't unlock the five tentacle kind of mode, I don't think, until you've done everything else. So you may end up playing some of the sort of like the two tentacle mode or whatever, which is really sort of simple and slow.
Mm-hmm. That's what I saw.
I mean, it kind of just gets you used to things, you know, and it's quite relaxing. It's got the good, you know, what you expect from a skip game in general, and certainly the art style games, which is that very unique, distinctive sound design that they employ. It drums for every time you initiate the rotation on the microbe and collecting all the different things and everything. So, you know, it definitely has that kind of slightly hypnotic kind of quality to it.
It looked a lot like Flow to me when I saw it.
Yeah. That's what I've heard. I've not played Flow.
Is it kind of like Flow with a kind of a rhythm game element? I mean, is the gameplay sort of beat-based, you know? Like,
I wouldn't say rhythm game or beat-based like that, but there definitely is. You do get into a kind of rhythm with the gameplay in terms of, like, obviously these tentacles, as they get longer, they become more of a problem in terms of they start kind of flailing about. You know, there is satisfying kind of physics to it. And so it does feel like you're kind of floating around in some sort of liquid. And these tentacles start flopping in ways that you wouldn't want them to. So,
are they flopping around by momentum, or are they just kind of autonomously flagellating? Because that could be frustrating if
by
it's
momentum.
Random.
That's the thing. It is predictable.
Okay.
So you're not in like complete comprehensive control, because it does, especially if you've got the five, you are controlling this sort of tangly mess of a thing. But at the same time, you are in control. It isn't just random. You know what I mean? You can predict what's going to happen once you get a really good feel for it. And that's the thing. You do get a good feel for it, I feel, when you play with the classic controller. That's really the way to play this game for me. Because the Wii Remote setup is you use the D-pad to move the organism, and then you sort of either turn clockwise or anti-clockwise with the 1 and 2 buttons, sort of NES style. But if you go classic controller, you've just got total dual analog control. And that means obviously you can move, you know, in very fine increments if you want. You can rotate very slowly if you want. You know, you've just got that true analog control.
So it's a twin stick cell culture.
Yeah, it is. I mean, sometimes even when you are actually in certain stages, kind of almost getting bombarded with loads of these organisms that you kind of have to deal with, it does start to feel like one of those weirder modes from Geometry Wars Galaxies a little bit, once it does get more hectic. I mean, because what will tend to happen, like I said, you get into this rhythm where you get the feel of, okay, well, you know, if I travel towards the thing I'm trying to collect in a certain direction and just tilt the organism at the right time, I'm going to collect it without the other tentacles getting in the way. And then you get into it and you keep doing it. But then if you make a mistake, what happens is that the tentacle breaks off at the point that the incorrect thing hits it. So you could say the goal of the level will be get every tentacle to 10 units long. And so you might have it at 9. And if it gets broken off at the stem, it goes back to like 1. Or on the other hand, you might just break it off at the tip, and so that's no big deal. But if one just becomes way shorter than the others, that really kind of breaks that rhythm, and it's surprising how quickly everything can fall apart. You know, what seemed really easy and everything, all of a sudden it's like you get this huge kind of influx of colours that you don't want, and you've just got that one left that you do want to collect.
Tetris syndrome.
It could seem like a cakewalk and then become surprisingly difficult. But you've got 5 different stages for each of these different modes, like you have the 2 tentacles through 5. But then once you do all of those, you unlock another couple of levels. And these are actually quite different from the ones before them, because rather than a just kind of fairly random amassing of these different coloured organisms, they actually start to come in like waves and patterns. Like, so they'll come in like a little trail, or they'll come in like sort of banks from side to side. And so that does feel more structured, less simple, and it's also more predictable. So it's kind of like you will kind of learn little tricks about how best to deal with these formations and things. So those levels feel more interesting to me. I almost wish there were a greater percentage of the stages. But as it is, it's very satisfying in much the same way that other Art Star games is. It's certainly not as sort of simple as something like Cubello, which is one of their other original Art Star games for Wii. But I think the other part of it that I haven't really got into it yet is the score attack modes. Because you've got like an endless mode, and you've got a snake mode, which is quite interesting, where you have one tentacle. That's all you've got, and it's simply a case of how long can you make it before you die. And obviously that's the problem. Like I said, the longer it gets, effectively the bigger your hitbox is. But what happens is you can pick up these items that create clusters, so it effectively like ties it off and shortens it. But the thing, what will happen is if you take a hit, that cluster will unravel and the full length of the tentacle will be revealed. So it's that rapidly deteriorates. Like you'll be playing it and you see, well, oh, this is fairly manageable. And you'll take one hit and the tentacle like, increases threefold. And it's like, shit, I can't avoid anything. I've got this thing the length of the screen. That's a kind of classic arcade style kind of high score challenge where it's like you get on a roll, and then the roll ends, and that's it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe some of those modes will have some kind of lasting appeal. I'll have to see.
It sounds like, I mean, it's a fairly full-featured game compared to some of the other art style stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff to unlock. There's quite a few different modes. So I think if you get into just the core gameplay of it, I think you will enjoy it. And I have, certainly. The core feel of it is quite good. I'm not sure that they could have done something a little more interesting with the kind of layouts that there are.
Well, I think I'll have to check it out. So anyway, that's going to end new business. When we come back, it's part 2 of our E3 predictions feature, where we will focus on the Wii and Wii HD, as I say jokingly. Stick around, we'll be back with that. We are back for the E3 predictions part of the show. As we record this, E3 is just a few days away from beginning, and by the time you hear this, it will have pretty much started unofficially. Monday, we'll have the press conferences from the major third parties, EA, Ubisoft, Activision. I think maybe all three of those are on Monday. Tuesday morning is the Nintendo press conference, followed by the Sony. So yeah, those are kind of the preamble, and then E3 officially kicks off Tuesday afternoon with the actual expo and meetings and things like that. So it's kind of like last year where Nintendo's got the press conference in the morning, and then like 2 hours after that, the booth opens and we go play their games. So it's not like in previous years where you had them on separate days. And then Wednesday and Thursday are all day E3. And Friday is
rest,
chill out and sleep and go see Toy Story probably for us. So just in terms of the way we're going to be covering it for the site, we've got 7 people in attendance. James and I will both be there from the show.
Yep.
So we'll be holding down the podcast front for sure. Neil is going to be there. Jared will be there. Aaron, TYP, Carly.
Shit, that's right. I forgot Carly's coming into town.
It's exciting. I haven't, you know, Carly hasn't been to E3 since, I want to say 2005. About 2005.
I just started at Game Informer.
It might have been 2004 then. But it's been quite a while, so it'll be fun to have her back. And Carly is a machine at E3.
That's good. We need machines.
You'll hear from them next week because we'll probably get everybody. I'm going to try to do a podcast every day. We'll see if that works out.
They will talk.
That will be my primary responsibility, so it's more a matter of if I can get everybody else to put down their laptops long enough to do it. But usually everybody's pretty eager to participate. It'll be fun. So my goal is to have a show every day. I don't know how timely they'll be by the time we get them out on the feed, but hopefully we'll have a quick turnaround on that. I doubt we'll have anything from the home front in terms of audio, but there will be plenty of coverage. We've got a lot of support from the home team. We're going to put up as much stuff as we can. We've always kicked ass at E3, and even though we have a smaller group this year, I don't think it's going to be any different. So we're really excited about it, and this is following up. 2 weeks ago, we did our E3 predictions and focused on DS and 3DS and DSi, I guess. And so this week, we're going to focus on the Wii, and Greg, once again, has put together the notes for this, so I will let you choreograph this charade.
As opposed to charade last week.
Yes.
Tomato, tomato.
So, yeah, this is the console focus part of our E3 preview. And the first set of topics that I want to explore before we get into the specifics of the software that we're expected to see for Wii is some of the more kind of macro issues. And the first question that I want to pose to the assembled panel here is, Nintendo going to feel the need to have any kind of hardware response or of any kind, be it at a peripherals, accessories, or in fact a new version of the Wii or even a successor, God forbid, to the Wii in response to what's happening with Sony and Microsoft's incursions into motion control?
You mean the vitality sensor's not enough?
Well, they showed that. That was last year.
But you'll get to experience it now.
You can only have that impact once.
Well, it depends on what they want to do with it.
We'll get to the vitality sensor. Patience. I know you're chomping at the bit to talk about vitality sensor.
Is the vitality sensor going to impact us, or are we going to impact it?
I'm going to impact the shit out of that thing. Just saying. Just kidding.
Damn.
So in terms of motion control, I think, you know, Nintendo's advantage here is that the motion, I mean, they've obviously got way more experience with motion control, period, than the other companies, unless you count six-axis, which I don't. And they have more experience in sort of the second-generation motion control because of Motion Plus, which, I'm sorry, the support for Motion Plus is fucking pathetic. When you think that thing was announced 2 years ago, almost to the day.
Yep.
So developers, not least of which Nintendo, but even third parties have...
Who has supported it less than some other companies?
Yeah. I mean, EA's probably done a better job than Nintendo has so far. So I think the impetus is on Nintendo, and it's really, really critical for them this year at E3 to show us more than one game that uses Motion Plus in a really compelling way. Because if they're going to sell more Wiis, more games to people this year, especially in the face of all this distraction from Microsoft and Sony with their motion control stuff. Nintendo needs to say, you know what? We've got that too, except we know what to do with it. We've got actual games, not just demos. We've got games that you want to play with Motion Plus. And guess what? It works better than those other systems. And here's why. Here's proof. They've really got to show that. I mean, obviously they'll have Zelda with Motion Plus, but they cannot stop there. If that's the only thing they've got to show for Motion Plus, it will be a failure for their motion control initiative.
And anything that's going to be like, apparently Conduit 2 is going to have Motion Plus and all that. Yes. That would be very subtle with the
first
person.
There's going to be a lot of optional kind of features from third-party
stuff. You were talking
stuff.
About the kinds of things where the very fundamental nature of the experience is predicated
motion
on Motion Plus.
Motion Plus required games, basically.
Right, and I think the sales of Red Steel 2 are probably scaring a lot of third parties away from doing Motion Plus exclusive games. So it's really up to Nintendo to do that.
I mean, in the context of the hand-wringing over Red Steel 2 sales, I mean, when you consider that people show dismay about the sales of other third-party games on Wii, and they've got the whole user base to play with,
sure.
Whereas they're playing with the small subset of the user base that has bought Wii Sports Resort or got it for Tiger or whatever else.
Well, or was willing to pay the extra 10 to get the
yeah, or
version,
or he's
right.
Willing to pay extra money to buy one.
I don't think
it.
That's a huge issue.
I just think it's not, considering Nintendo hasn't put themselves out there in that arena, it's hardly surprising that third parties haven't, regardless of the sales of Red Steel 2, just in general.
I do find it interesting now that anybody who buys a Wii is going to get a Motion Plus as part of their stealth price cut when they basically started packaging in Wii Sports Resort.
Yeah, right. That's right.
So any future Wii sales will have Motion Pluses, and I wonder if that was just a we have to get this into homes move.
Availability isn't the issue. Rationale is the issue. Why do I want to use that thing? Why do I want a game that uses Motion Plus? Nintendo really has to show that to us at this E3.
It's true. And, well, the problem with Motion Plus originally is the fact that because it didn't come with the system initially, like, they segmented their own market. So
yeah.
That's why you've got problems. You know, any game moving forward is going to probably need it packed in with it. Kind of like when games towards the end of the N64's life cycle had the expansion packs. I mean, I have multiple expansion packs.
Yes, I have three of them.
You know?
Really?
You know, so, I mean, it's a big problem. Do they need to show reasons why? Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I mean, I agree in many ways. I'm still surprised at the sort of lackluster nature of the support. But going back to the idea of them, you know, having to show new kind of accessories or peripherals or whatever, they've done it for a while now. Motion Plus itself 2 years ago, the Vitality Sensor last year, it's certainly a pattern.
Did they do anything the year before?
Wii Fit was the year before. It is a pattern that needs to stop.
I mean,
they haven't
plastic.
Really even shown Vitality Sensor yet.
And that's this year.
Right.
But, like, do you really need any more plastic crap laying around your apartment or house?
Not when they're barely using the ones they've already got out there.
I mean, well, I've been surprised by the remarkable specificity for all of these peripherals in terms of that very few of them have, you know, a lot of software to support them. The balance board.
Wii Speak is terrible support.
Oh, God. I forgot about Wii Speak.
Wii Speak was a big piece of shit. I mean, that was like...
It needs to be revamped. Like, they need to do a Wii Speak Pro.
There needs to be an apology letter sent out to everyone who owns the original.
No, just let people use Bluetooth headsets and be done with it. Like, it's
right.
Just ridiculous.
I think, given that this year, the Move and Natal are actually going to be, you know, there front and center with, you know, full games being demonstrated... You think that the way to respond to that is not to have another accessory or something, it's another different way to interact with games, but to actually go software first and say, this is what we're really doing with the stuff we've already got, and
yes.
This is legit, you know, it's not tech demo.
Yeah, because Nintendo's in serious danger of confusing their customers at this point. There's so many accessories, and a lot of them, it's not really clear what it does. I mean, I think they ended up doing a fantastic job of explaining the balance board to people with those commercials, but Motion Plus really has not been explained very well to people. And no wonder, I mean, it uses microscopic little machines inside of a white plastic block that snaps in. It's not obvious from looking at it what it does, and it's not even obvious from watching videos of it what it does. You really kind of have to feel it, and even then, it's only obvious if the game is programmed extremely well and designed around it.
It's using Metachlorians. That's what...
Yeah. Are we going to retcon this thing?
Well, look at this from the other perspective. You've got Sony and Microsoft, they're bringing their motion control strategies to E3 this time. I was just wondering how much you think they are really going to try and play directly on Nintendo's turf, or try and say, well, we're doing it differently.
They're going to say they're doing it differently and play
not
on Nintendo's turf.
I mean, Microsoft seems to have the greater capacity to say they're doing it differently because the tile is certainly very different. Whereas, I mean, PS3, what they showed at GDC already, and just the fundamental technological nature of the wand, and the sub-controller and all that, it seems like it's going to be pretty much one-for-one kind of stuff.
Look, all three of these approaches are very different technologically, but in terms of creating a way for the player to interact with the game, they're all pretty similar. It all involves a lot of waving around and pointing at things on the screen. So I don't expect to see dramatically different approaches to how this stuff is integrated. You know, outside of maybe some kind of really experimental thing from Peter Molyneux or, somebody at Sony. I mean, I can see, one or two projects per company will really showcase what their thing does. But in terms of, the vast majority of software that will be produced for these could probably work on all three with a few tweaks. Billy, you know more about this multi-platform stuff. What's your take on that?
I mean, I think that as exactly what you said about Natal, I think Natal is the most different because there isn't a controller. Like, you are the controller or whatever you scan in is going to be the thing. But, like, right now, we don't know. Like, I want to see this stuff. Move seemed to, you had your party collections, you had your boxing, you had your sports thing, you had your party games, and SOCOM.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine Killzone 3 with Move controls as an option.
But even that's not any different, really, than what has already been done on Wii with
exactly.
Metroid Prime and The Conduit and Call of Duty and a lot of stuff.
You're just putting it into these sorts of HD games. And I don't know, I mean, a lot of I love being not like a hardcore FPS guy. I love the pointer controls. I find it a lot easier to play a first-person game in that way. But a lot of people that are the kinds of people that buy Killzone...
Me.
I did buy Killzone, but the people that bought Killzone that are not like me are very set in their ways about dual analog. It's just, I don't want to. I'm not interested in buying a Move to play it that way. They're happy with it the way it is. So, I mean, I could see them including it, but it's not a huge selling point, really.
Yeah, I don't think we've seen anything yet. Like, Natal, I'm actually more curious about just because... of all the things that they promised.
And also the reports of it being scaled back.
For price.
And priced up. Scaled back and priced up.
Is it going to be just a glorified, like, iToy?
I do think the fact they're giving it its own event is kind of interesting.
They're trying to partition it away from, they're sort of trying to separate the messaging out. Because I think you've seen Nintendo have kind of got themselves in a bit of trouble by not doing that in the past, when it's like, okay, now, and finally for the big game, the final part of the show, Wii Music. Right, that's the kind of trouble you get when everyone's expecting one thing and then they get something else and you don't separate it out that way. But I think it's quite a shrewd move. And I'm sure branding will play into that as well, because it'll almost be like a separate console when they put out that, with the rumored $300 arcade plus Natal bundle. I think they'll almost be selling that to people who don't know much about the 360 as a different console.
Yeah, we'll see how successful that is. I mean, I do think they're going to try that, but
I can understand why they're making that move versus just trying to sell it to their base, because they're not trying to sell. I mean, obviously, adding motion controls is trying to attract an audience outside of what they already have.
Yeah, but a lot of that audience who would be interested already bought a Wii and probably doesn't play it that much.
Yeah.
Some of them even regret the purchase because they're not doing it right.
Have they reached the saturation point already?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's a good strategy.
Well, here's another interesting kind of overarching kind of part. I mean, this year with the 3DS, the first time since 2006 that Nintendo's got a legitimate new platform to show off with the 3DS. And I think, how does this affect how big a part of the proceedings Wii is going to be? I mean, are they going to emphasize 3DS to the point that really Wii is not focused on in the same way that it has been in the past few years.
It'll be 50-50. It's always been 50-50, really. I mean, it wasn't back in the GameCube GBA days, it was way more focused on GameCube. But ever since DS and Wii have kind of been partners in crime, it's been pretty much 50-50, and I think that will continue.
But I just think 3D in general, and this is on consoles and, of course, with portables, is one of the storylines of E3. There's kind of this arms race kind of going on. They're all going to kind of lay claim to what may or may not be a sort of boom market in getting people on the 3D bandwagon. And I was wondering whether that makes the case for them to really amp up the portable side of it for the first time since 2004.
I think 3DS is going to take a big chunk. They'll talk about DS because they're going to be like, DS, we've been selling a shitload, we're awesome. And then they're going to be like, we sold a shitload, we're awesome. But I do think as far as games, like, I think they're going to focus, they won't focus on the games of DS at all.
Well, they'll talk about Golden Sun a little bit, probably.
Golden Sun would be, they're not going to talk about it. I think what they'll do with Golden Sun is that'll be part of their trailer stuff. That'll be part of the DS.
The sizzle reel or whatever, yeah.
Because this audience, you guys, myself, like, we know what Golden Sun is. Like, we've been waiting for this game. Like, this game is awesome. Does the USA Today's and the Good Housekeepings and the mom and dads out there really give a shit about Golden Sun? No.
Well, and it'd be do well to feature in the presentation at all when you consider things like, you know, when Rhythm Heaven was announced, a game which ultimately was marketed with Beyonce, it didn't get in the presentation at all.
Oh, right.
So for quite a while, they've actually, you know, haven't been giving the DS software that much play, and that's why I think perhaps we could lose out a bit in terms of the time in the media briefing, because they will spend quite a lot on the 3DS, and the DS isn't dead yet either, so you've got two platforms to consider. We move on to some of the first party Wii software that we already know about, and of course the huge thing is Zelda. We know it's going to be there, but
it might be the only thing.
It might be, if it is a lesser part of the presentation, but yeah, we know it's going to be there, and we know it's going to use the Motion Plus, so that's about it, short of some concept art from a year roundtable a year ago. So I mean, the first thing I'm going to ask everyone is just a sort of reprise of our predictions, if we've changed our minds at all. Is it coming out this year?
I think absolutely. I think it will be their big holiday title. And if it's not, I don't know what the hell it is, but they better have
Mario Galaxy 2.
That's what we're all asking ourselves. Johnny, you sticking with it?
Oh, yeah. I thought so at the beginning of the year. And
yeah.
It's become even more clear now that I was right and James was wrong.
Okay, I guess the question is, James, have you changed your mind?
I can't.
You were convinced that a Zelda game has never hit the target. They can never do it on time. So this is unthinkable.
I believe it is their intention to get it out this year. Yes. Look, I've learned.
So you're now predicting that they're going to say it'll come out in the holiday, but then they'll miss it.
I'm giving myself the ability to account if they do miss it.
Yeah, hedging your bets. Okay.
Fudging it. Yeah. Well, fair enough. Well, I certainly subscribe to the idea that I cannot fathom what would be the holiday game if it is not Zelda.
They might have another semi-big game like a Pikmin 3 or something, you know, something totally out of the blue like an F-Zero or a Star. You know, one of these kind of second-tier things, but is that going to be their big holiday title?
It isn't a like-for-like substitution.
No, right.
They have not got something on that scale.
They'll obviously have something that we think they'll have something that uses the vitality sensor, and I don't think Zelda will be that game.
No, I hope not.
Although I kind of wish it was.
I bet Zelda's part of it. I bet Zelda will use it.
Ooh, that's interesting because, I mean, as we've said, hitherto, these accessories that they've come up with have been very specific.
And never the twain shall meet.
We know from comments Iwata's made that there's going to be some sort of relaxation software with the vitality sensor.
Oh,
it's kind of going to be the thing that it's specifically tied to.
Relax.
But you see it being applied in more traditional games like Zelda.
I mean, I'm with Billy in that it could be, it could serve like a kind of a Rumble Pack Ocarina.
The Stone of Agony.
Yeah.
Stupidest name for a Zelda.
It is
ever.
A stupid name.
It could be in there somewhere, but I have a feeling that you will not be able to use Vitality Sensor and a Nunchuck at the same time. Like, the Vitality Sensor as a pass-through port just seems overkill.
But because then it would be passed through the Wii Remote, through the Vitality Sensor, into the Nunchuck, which
right.
would be
and,
absurd.
And by the way, it's already going through Motion Plus because it's Zelda.
Yes,
so
it would
you're
be
gonna
fantastic.
Have like three accessories attached to your Wii Remote at the same time.
And also, go ahead and use the balance board while you're at it. Just wrap it all together.
That wouldn't surprise me. After dealing with like GBA link cables and all that bullshit, like I would not. Like, God, I was thinking about me when I was playing Monster Hunter Tri. Like I had the Wiimote attached to the Classic Controller Pro, and then just to talk to people, I was using WeSpeak, but that turned into like a big pain in the ass. So then everybody just got on Xbox Live, so I had the Xbox controller
the
with
headset
the headset.
As well.
Like there was shit everywhere. Oh, and then to talk to other people that didn't have headsets or anything else, I had the keyboard too. So awesome! It looked
well,
like
see, if they did make us use or did offer a mode to use all those devices, I would be thrilled to see somebody from Nintendo demo it. But besides
the
that, I would have no interest in its mode.
Don't mind me. I just had the fucking Borg throw up all over me, and there's just cords and cables everywhere.
You are Locutus. So, James, I'm going to give you one legitimate out on Zelda being delayed and being replaced with something. We don't know what Retro is doing. I'm sure this will come up later, but that whatever they're doing, that is the only thing I can imagine that would have the potential to be a valid substitution for Zelda in that holiday slot.
We don't know what or if they're doing for Wii. I mean,
right. No, hey, they could be doing 3DS launch titles.
I'm thinking yeah. that. They could be cleaning out their desks. I mean, nobody knows.
I think let's pull it back to Zelda in terms of what I'm really interested in is the promises of it being significantly different for the first time in a while on consoles.
Oh,
I think it will be just different enough that we have to say, yeah, okay, it's different. But it's not going to be different enough for me.
The first is the interface, obviously, how Motion Plus will be used. And one of the interesting strands is that we've heard in the past from Miyamoto, some of these interviews, that they've kind of dabbled in the developmental stage in first-person perspectives being used in Zelda and Ocarina of Time early on.
Yeah, yeah.
And some of the lessons there were applied to Metroid Prime. And then when they were sort of experimenting with Twilight Princess on the Wii, I think Iwata GDC or Aonuma at a GDC presentation talked about some of the sort of flirtations with that. So given what you could do with Motion Plus, do you see any role for a first-person perspective in the new Zelda?
It could swap to first-person when it's time for sword combat.
Are you thinking like Red Steel kind of combat
yeah.
perspective?
No, please.
I think
no.
It'll be handled differently than Red Steel 2. Quite, I think it'll be handled very differently.
But I mean the same kind of like conceptual perspective on how fighting would play out.
Yes, potential. I mean, without the shooting.
We don't know. I mean, you could have a crossbow.
Well, I mean, I'm sure he will have a bow of some kind, but I don't know how. I don't think it'll be as integrated as it is in Red Steel 2, where you just like flip between one and the other just by pointing. But I could, I do think it's possible they might go with first person for sword fighting, but I don't think you'll play the entire game in first person because that is so un-Japanese. You lose all that great visual character design of Link that's so iconic. I mean, otherwise, how are you going to look at it and know it's a Zelda game? It's going to look like Fallout 3, which is another game that they kind of did that.
It would look like a very underpowered, awful Fallout, is what you're saying. I mean, if they really want to do something smart, please God, if you want to say make it different, make all the bosses new. Don't recycle the same shit we've been playing for 10 years. Like,
how many times would you like to hurt these bosses before they die, Billy?
Four.
God. Four, five, four. Six,
that's
seven.
That's radical. That really is.
Oh, please, just make that different. And you know what? To really make me happy, I hope it's like Wind Waker. I really do. Like, I want a Zelda off a train, not a train.
Well, it would certainly run counter to that concept art they show. It would make that showing utterly pointless, other than as a deliberate red herring.
Yeah, that's a hell of a red herring. I think it's not going to be toon shaded, but I do think it might be more cartoony looking than Twilight Princess, which to be fair, and I think people ignore that. I don't think Twilight Princess gets enough credit for the variety and its art design, but when you're in the Twilight in that game, it's pretty cell shaded. I mean, there's some interesting stuff with the art design. I think when you're in the normal world, it's more generic looking. It looks more like a higher res Ocarina of Time. But I do think when you're in the Twilight, that game really looks good. And I can see them doing more, going more in that direction where it's kind of in between, you know, a Twilight Princess and a Wind Waker.
Well, because, I mean, the interesting challenge with doing motion control sword combat in a substantive way from the third-person perspective is we haven't really seen it yet. No More Heroes uses the motion just for the finishing moves. And then, of course, Twilight Princess was just this gesture being assigned to a button press. So that was meaningless. So, I mean, is that how you possibly see the battles being kind of separated into two kinds, that you'd have the standard battle where maybe the motion isn't going to be such a big part of it, and then predetermined, like, duels?
Well, that's more like the original Red Steel.
Yeah, that's closer to Red Steel 1.
Yeah, that's a little scary.
Well,
but,
you know, I mean, I'm not sure I'd want to play a game where all of my sword combat is one-to-one mapped, and I'd have to, at least not for long sessions.
Right, it does seem problematic in a game on the scale of a Zelda title, doesn't it?
Exactly, that is my feeling on it, and that's why I think perhaps you might have to partition it into these particular kinds of fights. You're fighting against particular kinds of characters, or maybe even one character, like a persistent nemesis kind of character.
No, I think it'll be one-to-one sword combat, and I think they'll just rip the archery straight out of Wii Sports. I'm serious.
Oh, fantastic.
But you'd have to switch hands every time you want to use the bow. I mean, that's not a good idea, is it?
I don't know. Oh, yeah, and you get tangled up in all the 18 different wires with the vitality sensor.
That's right.
And all
after
that
you
shit.
Choked yourself with the nunchuck cable.
If your heart's beating, it makes the pointer kind of jitter around on the screen, even
oh,
if you're
good.
Holding it perfectly.
That would be amazing in a Metal Gear game.
Oh, yeah. That would be sweet.
That is exactly the kind of thing Kojima would go for, too.
Oh, let's go to the other aspect of Zelda, which I feel probably even more so needs to change, is the quest structure, the way the game plays out. You know, three things, Master Sword, five or six things, Ganondorf, which has been pretty much the standard to Link to the Past. Are we going to finally see that change as well? Or if you put the interface coating on the top of it, they don't need to change that.
So would you think like five or six things Master Sword, then three things Ganondorf?
Yeah. It's brilliant.
They have tweaked it here and there. There's some stuff in Wind Waker that's different, like when you're infiltrating the fortress and you're doing all the stealth stuff. But that game still has the kind of overall structure. Yeah. It just has these little pockets that are different. I mean, I would love for this to be Majora's Mask 2, but I don't think it'll be that radical. But I'd like it to be radical in that same way, just in a, you know, in a different direction. But I would like for them to totally go really mess with your expectations and just do something really quite different. And yet, you know, and that's the great thing about Majora's Mask, it still feels like Zelda. So that's kind of what I'm hoping for. It's not that I want Zelda to be un-Zelda-like. I just want it to be Zelda, but a lot fresher and less predictable. And Majora's Mask is the key example of that to me, and I think it's totally within their power to go back and do something like that.
I'm gonna put it in space. It'll be great.
The Legend of Space Zelda.
I would not complain.
I mean, a couple of other things. I think there's been a lot of talk about making it more accessible. And obviously we saw how they did that on the DS. And we've seen how they've done that with Mario in terms of like the Super Guide and all that kind of thing. So how are they going to do it with this Zelda? Are they going to use Motion Plus to make it more accessible?
More DVDs.
More DVDs.
I saw the DVD today, by the way, for Galaxy.
Oh, I'm distraught we didn't get the DVD.
Is it embarrassing, Greg?
It's overkill, exactly. You know, you expect, like, this is the analog stick. I'm not kidding.
Oh, God.
But I was distressed to see that it teaches you how to do the heartless, cold-blooded dismount from Yoshi in midair. It's teaching the kids to kill Yoshi.
The Yoshi murder, yes.
Sickening, vile DVD.
I think Navi is going to run around and just scream at you the entire time. Like, go this way.
Hey, press A! Press A!
Go north. Go that way. North is that way. Follow me. You know, like, boing, boing, you know, bounce around. Like, it'll be just...
You're probably right, Billy. That's what I'm afraid of.
The problem with the Super Guide is that it can't be like in Mario Galaxy where it was showing you how to get around jumps, because it'd be like, all right, here's a Super Guide on how to push this stupid block on ice.
Nah.
I'm sure it could give you like a first step towards solving a particular kind of puzzle. It could play a video that shows you something, or that, and then ultimately you could perhaps elect to just have it do the puzzle for you.
I'm sure the Super Guide stuff will be limited to dungeon puzzles, basically. I mean, outside of that, I could see them putting in, I don't know, some kind of compass. Maybe just a better map. Like the, I mean, seriously, Zelda maps blow. They could do a lot better than that.
I think Navi will have a part of it, though. Like, it'll probably, like, highlight, like, the first steps of a puzzle, or even how, like, remember with Wind Waker, that was one of the things that they added where you could always tell what you're supposed to do by looking where Link is looking, like checking where
his line of sight,
that was
which
amazing
was super
stuff.
Smart, but like,
yeah.
I don't know if they could like, it's not like his eyes are going to pop out and then like stick to something, you know?
There
but, like,
you go.
I don't know.
I want to see that.
I hope they don't dumb it down, because that's one of the cool parts, you know, when you're a kid or even when you're an adult, like, figuring out a Zelda puzzle is kind of cool.
Right.
That's part of the fucking game. Like, I don't want
it makes you feel smart, and that's the best part about Zelda, is playing it and thinking, oh, I figured this out.
I would say with Spirit Tracks, you know, it's got its problems, but you've got the interface, which is meant to be very accessible, but there are complicated puzzles in that game. Challenging mental puzzles.
Sure, and Galaxy 2, again, I mean, they give a lot of lip service to how they wanted to make it more accessible, but Galaxy 2 is fucking hard. So
yeah, man.
I'm not necessarily paranoid about them dumbing down Zelda. I think they'll
I'm not too worried.
They'll have a few initiatives, you know, maybe it's all in marketing. Maybe it's not even part of the game itself. It's
yeah,
just they got to explain it better to people.
Oh, I could see that, certainly.
Yeah.
Well, I think we'll move on now, change of pace, to the vitality sensor. Probably be fairly brisk, this one. But yeah, so Billy, you were of the opinion that you will see this demonstrated for multiple games in the briefing?
I don't say it multiple, but, you know, they got to give you a reason why you should stick your finger into this thing, and, like, why you really want it. Like, I don't know.
That's a phrase I don't want to ever hear.
Well, sadly, it's a phrase you're going to hear it. You know what I mean?
More smiles to more faces.
In terms of the briefing itself, do you think this is something that's quite difficult to demonstrate on stage, in the sense that it's supposed to be, like I said, but what we understand is the principal product is going to be some sort of relaxation-related software, and you're going to have a bunch of nervous people on stage.
Well, they'll just drug up Cammy.
How will you tell the difference?
Shoot a full of Vicodin.
What I think they'll do is, I think they'll show it in an actual game. Like, they'll show how it relates to Zelda. Maybe they'll add something, you know, maybe they've been working with Tecmo or Team Ninja with something for Metroid. But then, why not, I mean, it's basically a heartbeat sensor, correct? So why not do something with Wii Fit? And so Wii Fit Plus, Super Plus, or whatever the hell they're going to call it.
Plus Plus.
I could see that, yeah.
You know, so then it's got your, I mean, then you can really see your heart rate, and then you have true caloric,
better
what you're doing.
Stat tracking.
It's true, yeah. You can convert heart rate to calories burned, especially if you have the weight as well. It helps a lot.
Yeah, which they would, because it's the balance board.
My prediction for Vitality, I'm not going to make too many predictions about games, but I do think the accessory itself might be quite a bit different than what we saw last year, because you think about clipping that thing on your finger, it really kind of hampers what you can do with it and what you can do while it's on. It's hard to play a game while you've got this thing on your finger, because you do still hold the Wii controllers in your hand. So I think it could be something that more like clips on, I don't know, your earlobe. I mean, you know, maybe even you put it, it turns into like an armband and you put it around your wrist.
Well, the only other thing I could think is if you had the vitality sensor hooked onto a second remote that was, you know, active, and then you were using one hand with just single Wii remote controls.
Maybe it's an upgraded nunchuck, and it has kind of the metal plate on the bottom of it, like you get on treadmills and stair climbers and things. They could just upgrade the nunchuck, and
the device they showed last year literally looked like they ripped it off of a hospital bed.
Yeah, I don't think it'll look like that.
What's interesting is because that's all we had last year was the very basic design of it. It would render last year's showing completely pointless.
That would be a good start.
See, I'm more interested in how they're going to demonstrate its capacity. Like, I don't know, like, how are they going to be able to say, all right, so when you relax, This is how you roll. I mean, how do you quantify that in a game?
Well, I mean, that's up to the geniuses and the software development side to come up with something.
I see it. I could see them doing something with like a horror action game where there's a lot of tension.
Eternal Darkness 2. Are you predicting it?
No. No.
What am I saying? You've already played it.
That'd be awesome. I would love to see that happen, but you know, I see that I could see them doing something like having a scary game where the game gets either more intense or something, you know, like Fatal Frame. That would be a perfect example.
That's why it hasn't come out here yet.
That's right. They delayed it for 3 years so they can integrate this stupid hospital bed.
We have to wait.
I've seen Nintendo do dumber things than that, so yeah. you honestly never know. I mean, but that's how I think they can quantify it.
So Johnny's prediction is we're going to end up with Eternal Darkness 2, where as your heart rate goes up, you get more shots of statues and bookcases and less shots of actual game action.
It's just, you know, when you think about something that reads your bio feedback like that, or even just has the capability to mess with your head, I think you have to think in terms of Eternal Darkness and also Kojima, because that's what they do, and they, you know, they fed off of each other anyway. So yeah, I think you have to think in those terms. But I'm not confident at all that Vitality Sensor will be presented with what we would consider a real game. In fact, I think more than likely it's going to be shown with some kind of application type software, you know, some kind of wellness thing, and it probably will be it'll be made available to developers if they want to try to put it in their games, but I don't necessarily think Nintendo's going to try to show a real game that uses Vitality.
I think it's going to suffer the same fate as the other peripherals. You know, it will end up being very specific to one piece of software, and there will be limited take up elsewhere by Nintendo or anyone else.
You mean you don't use your Zapper for all games you play?
Well, the Zapper doesn't have any functionality, I'll remind you of that.
It doesn't actually do anything.
Exactly. Well, the next thing I want to talk about is some of the games that we already know about. First of all, Metroid. So two things about this. First of all, what role is it going to have in the presentation? Is it actually going to be a big part of it? I mean, there is precedent for this in terms of corruption was emphasized quite a lot, despite the fact that it should have been out by that E3.
But what else was there that year, though?
Well, it was like Galaxy and stuff.
Yeah, there was
2007.
Quite a bit
of stuff. 2007 was a good year, James. It wasn't 2008.
Indeed. And then also Wii Sports Resort was at two E3 press conferences.
And it will be a chance to get the hype train rolling for the end of August or the beginning of September, whenever exactly it's going to come out. So you see it being a big part of the presentation first?
Nope. Part of the sizzle reel.
Yeah.
So just that you're not going to have someone from, what was it again? The Hylia dot something that played Metroid Prime 3 in some very fashionably torn jeans, I remember.
Well, see, the problem is that this game, I mean, it's already been completely exposed. I mean, is word.
I think that's overstating it, James.
I do. I do think that's overstating. I mean, people only played it for the first time at the Media Summit a few months ago.
And that was a very limited demo.
It was a limited demo.
But I mean, that's just it. It's at least been played.
But that's the question. Is the real blowout just going to be on the show floor?
That's what I feel like. I feel like what they do with it is like actually experiencing the levels themselves. I mean, I don't think they've got a lot of mysteries left to unveil about that particular title.
Yeah, but I mean, they are going to show it. I disagree with you, Billy. I think they're going to make it a pretty big, I mean, relatively big part of the press conference, because it's a game that is almost finished, so there's a lot to show, and it looks really good, and it caters to the audience who's watching this thing hoping for some awesome hardcore games, if you'll pardon the phrase. So I think they'd be stupid not to show it, honestly. I mean, they showed it last year. It was the big hit of the press conference last year. That's what everybody was talking about. So they're definitely going to show it again, and they're going to talk about it. I mean, I don't know that they're going to bring out Sakamoto to whatever, but they will talk about it as a huge game of their year.
Fair enough. Well, let's pivot to the show floor part of it in terms of when you get to play it, the three of you, I presume you'll all be playing it, what does it have to show you to reassure you that this is going to be something that's worthy of the Metroid legacy?
Structure. It's all about the structure. I've got to see a map that is not linear. I want to see upgrades. You know, I want to see the Metroid structure in place. I hope I get the sense that it's a little more open than Fusion, but right. Fusion is like the minimum that I can be cool with, you know?
The baseline.
Yeah. That's my main concern. I think I'd like to see that they've revamped the controls and the voice acting, but I don't hold out too much hope for either one of those. And I'm
when you say revamp the controls, what is it specifically that you would have in mind?
I'd like them to add nunchuck support, obviously. I mean, I think the current scheme is cool. It's novel. It's you know, switching between NES style and pointing at the screen is something that very few Wii games have tried to do. And maybe with good reason, but I think it makes more sense in Super Paper Mario, which is more of a slow-paced game. With Metroid...
And that was also quite a token part of the experience, yeah. Whereas this seems more important in terms of, you know, you can only fire missiles while you're in the first-person mode, and that's how you're going to beat some of the bosses. And like, it does seem very integral sort of part of the experience.
Right. I just worry about the responsiveness of it recognizing that you're now pointing at the screen. I don't expect them to add in the option to move around while you're in first person, because it's obviously that's not part of the game design.
Yeah, that's too fundamental.
It's, yeah, and that's fine, but I want to be able to play with the nunchuck and just hold down Z or whatever, and that puts you into first person, and now I can aim.
So it basically just sort of activates the pointer.
It's just going to be faster and more comfortable that way.
Mm-hmm, fair enough. Billy, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'm with Johnny. Like, I want it to control well. Like, novel is great, but if it doesn't work and it doesn't feel good, then it just takes away from the experience. So,
what are you worried about the idea that the game design has been pared down to a point to accommodate these controls?
I'm a little concerned, but I mean, from people that I know that have played it, like, they said it actually works pretty well. But I want to know if it works well. Like, am I gonna not want to shoot missiles? Because
right.
There's a chance I could totally eat it. Or is it going to come to a point where a lot of the missile stuff will be like when you're fighting bosses or mini bosses or whatever. So I don't know. You know, I just want it to stick to the conventions. I don't mind having it freshened up. You know, I think Team Ninja has chops. So as long as they stay true to the franchise. And if I wasn't in charge of making a Metroid game, I would be damn well sure that I stick to the conventions that fans of the series like. Because if you don't, they are going to crucify you. as we well know, like I remember when the first Prime came out, like nobody thought that Retro was going to be able to pull it off, and when they did and they stuck to the true things that made Metroid, like
people gave them credit.
People loved it.
People were quick to judge Metroid Prime, but they were also quick to admit that they'd been wrong once they played it.
And the first Metroid Prime I absolutely adored that game. So
it's our game of the decade. I don't know if you heard.
I did not, but it should be.
Yeah, that's voted on by our
stupid,
site.
Stupid listeners.
Oh, James. So one other thing I would really like to see, and I don't expect them to spoil, you know, the entire game and everything, every feature that it has. I'd like to see at least one new ability or weapon or, you know, I'd like to see that they're not just going to recycle all the things that have been used in all the previous games. I mean, I'd like for the game to have 5 new things like that, but I'd like to at least see evidence of at least one at E3.
Where did you get that number from? 5.
Where we'd see things like the speed boost being applied in Metroid again for the first time in a while, which is cool, or maybe the screw attack, you know, being even more sort of like the old days. But yeah, new abilities I think you want to see. I'm really intrigued what they're going to be doing with like the melee combat and all this kind of stuff, like, you know, the when you're not shooting in first person, it's all auto aim, and then there's some of this kind of up close and personal Team Ninja kind of stuff. I'm really intrigued to see how that works out, because it doesn't seem that Metroid.
She does wear a big suit of armor. I mean,
you would expect her to be eminently capable of pummeling things when necessary. So I'm sure we'll see some of that as a very stylish sort of close-in camera shots or whatever in the trailer part, at least. Well, on the complete other side, Wii Party. So we know about this now. It's coming out in July in Japan. I'm not sure how close behind it'll be in the Western markets, but I suppose the nightmare scenario for some people is this being emphasized a lot in possibly a scaled-down Wii presentation.
I think that's the comedy scenario. I don't know if it's the nightmare scenario. I think that's easily the funniest proposition for this particular presentation.
That's what James hopes will happen.
I would be laughing pretty much the entirety of the time, because all I'll be able to think of is hide the Wii remote.
Yeah, James is ruined. I can't think of Wii Party without laughing because of some things James and John have said, but I know people are really cynical about Wii Party, but every time I read something about Wii Party, I think, you know, that actually sounds interesting. It may not be good, but I don't have any reason to assume that it'll be terrible.
Optimism is just pouring from Johnny right now.
Sorry, look, I just think that's what, from what I've heard so far, things like passing the remote around without jostling it too much, that is interesting stuff. I mean, I think about that in the same way I think about Let's Tap when I first heard about that. It's like, wow,
yeah.
This controller's been out there for like years, and yet people are still thinking of new things to do with it. Now, can you build a game around that? Well, in the case of Let's Tap, probably not. In the case of Wii Party, they don't really have to because it's just a mini game, right? So there's not the expectation that you have to be able to do all this crazy stuff with it. If it only works in 30-second increments, that's okay. And I think it's interesting that the game is maybe getting away from Mario Party stuff where it's more about let's adapt these gameplay mechanics that we've pulled from all of our different franchises and made them suck. And, you know, we've rehashed these same ideas over and over. I think it's interesting to do a party game that is really focused around the Wii controller and all the weird things you can do with it that nobody else is really doing.
Well, I mean, that's just one of the modes of the game, though. What is it? What do they call it? The house party mode or whatever it was called, where it was like the 8 mini games.
There's a bunch of different subsets of games, and that's
one where
of
it's
them,
like the pick up the Wii remote that's making the animal noise that's on screen.
Yeah.
But there is the traditional set of mini games. I think there's like 80 of them.
Yeah, I assume there's at least a component of it that's closer to Mario Party, certainly.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know as much about that part, but I was just thinking, you know, when I read about all these weird mini game descriptions of, you know, things you could do with a controller, it made me think back to WarioWare Smooth Moves, which was almost a launch title for Wii. It's a game I haven't put in a long time, but when that game first came out, we had some pretty fun times at my apartment with a large group. I mean, sometimes like 10 or 12 people standing around trying to play this, and it just doesn't actually work that well, just because a lot of the mini games involve pointing at the sensor bar, which people didn't understand, and they're positioned at far angles, and it just doesn't work all that well.
40 people in the room, so it's...
Yeah, but I mean, that experience I would like to have again. And I think, you know, that's something that not very many Wii games have compelled me to try to do.
Because there's been such a shortage of fucking party games to the Wii that Nintendo has to go back to the well again. Really? Really?
I almost question the decision to call it Wii Party, because it just doesn't distinguish itself.
They had the Wii brand it, so what do you call it?
No, you call it, please God, shoot me in the fucking head. I don't want to play this game. That's what
they should have called
it. Please.
Wii Carnival Party.
Wii Carnival.
This
does that.
Wii Carnival Party Chicken Shoot.
Chicken Shoot. Awesome.
Well, I can't really adequately describe my indifference to that game. So
I'm not ready to write it off. That's all I'm saying.
All right. Well, let's do the 180 degrees again and go to the issue of retro. So this, I think, is a pretty big issue for those of us that adore the Metroid Prime games, even though we know they're not going to be working on anything Metroid. But you know, the idea that it's been 3 years since Corruption came out and we've not heard anything about what they are working on, and with the key departures and everything, it's you know, it's a little unsettling, a little disconcerting what we've had to this point. But it can all be made right with an announcement at E3. So first of all, Billy, what kind of game do you think they would most likely be working on?
Well, they definitely have shooters down, but I don't know. I don't know if they're going to stick with that type of game. I just don't. I don't see it.
I mean, when we did the prediction show at the beginning of the year, my just totally, you know, gut nonsense prediction was that it would be an open world game. That it's something that you haven't necessarily had represented very well on Wii. I think retro, that's within their skill set to do it. And it would be something that would sort of fill a niche and at the same time extending their creative abilities beyond what they did with Metroid. Do you think that's feasible?
Yeah, I mean, why not? It's something that the system could use right now. I could see something like that. I hope it's not they could just try to out Wii Party.
I would be absolutely elated if they had two separate competing party games in their own booth.
Chicken Shoot 2 could be huge. You don't know, but I see the future. But, you know, here's a curveball idea. I mean, why not do what Microsoft used Rare for a lot and turn them into of something like services, where, and that's something that people are hinting at, that Nintendo's going to be talking about with online or the download area or something like that.
Well, I mean, the problem is Retro hasn't really shown any capabilities in those areas. So I'm not saying you're wrong, but I don't know how logical that is, Billy. I mean, Nintendo hasn't... See, this is something Microsoft maybe lacked, but Nintendo has entire studios in Japan who only work on that kind of stuff. So they kind of already got that. I mean, they're not necessarily doing a good job of it, but...
They got one dude in an office working on their whole online game.
Retro's, I've got an idea.
Retro's never made an online game, and they've never made a downloadable game. So I'm just not sure what expertise they have in those areas.
That was just a curveball. Who knows? I'm just hoping that they're going to do something different.
Well, what about... I mean, can they launch an original IP off the strength of the fact that they're Retro Studios and it could be successful?
And that's what they should do. I mean, I've made some pretty wacky predictions that they're working on F-Zero or Eternal Darkness 2 or whatever, but honestly, I think they should announce a new franchise. And if they do, I kind of hope it's not a first-person shooter. And not that I wouldn't love to play that, but I feel like they're going to have a very hard time making an original IP first-person shooter stand out. Because, and not just, I mean, there's not that much competition on Wii, but just in the entire marketplace, I feel like something like that could easily get drowned out by your Halo Reaches and your Gears of War 3 and all that stuff. So I think, you know, it needs to have a real hook, and the hook can't just be "we're Retro Studios, bitch." Like, there has to be some, there has to be more of a gameplay hook or more of a visual hook than just that.
But you think it's, you know, commercially, and from Nintendo's point of view, in terms of what it would deem appropriate to task Retro Studios with doing, you think it's viable that they could go with an original IP?
Absolutely.
Geist 2. Bring it.
Oh, boy.
Well, that's it. Now I've got a chance for a segue. Because, we could move on to third parties on Wii, which is probably going to be relatively brief. But one of the more bizarre, I think, things that we've learned recently is that there's going to be this GoldenEye revival, sort of quasi remake with the likeness of Daniel Craig inserted into it.
Are you serious? I mean, I didn't know the Daniel Craig part.
No, yeah, that's true.
That's
It's coming from Activision, but the developers of the DS version are Enspace, the people that made Geist, and they've made a number of other portable DS shooters.
Well, they made the GoldenEye Rogue Agent game for DS.
As well.
So they do have some experience in this area. They've also made the excellent Call of Duty games for DS.
Yeah, yes, and it seems like basically they've got the tech to do this kind of game on DS, so that's why they're doing it.
And I guess Eurocom is supposedly making the Wii version.
Who did the World Is Not Enough game once upon a time also have Bond chops.
Right, and they did another one as well, I think. But Eurocom is not a top-tier developer, unfortunately.
No, did Dead Space Extraction as well, which is, you know, quite
they
good.
They did part of it, yeah. They cooperated with EALA on it.
Is there going to be some sort of very unusual, nostalgic appeal of this game on Wii? Or I can't fathom what they're doing with it.
They've already tried to do a callback with the Rogue Agent game, and that was not good.
Yeah, that was also incredibly bizarre.
Incredibly bad.
And that was EA, and that was a long time ago now. So.
See, I'm just not sure that game has the coattails that we all assume it does.
The resonance with the current market.
And the problem is they can't really make a remake of the original GoldenEye. What this is going to be
because
is
it would be bad.
Well, no, they don't have the rights to do it. I mean, that game was published by Nintendo and developed by Rare, and neither of those parties is involved in this case. I don't think Nintendo's really going to be helping Activision make this. That's extremely unlikely. So I think this is a new game based on the GoldenEye movie license, which I'm sure they will make it as blatantly, obviously referencing the Rare game as they can without getting into legal problems, which is probably not going to be enough for most people. It's not made by the same people. It's not really going to be the same game. It's just going to have the same name. That's a problem. I mean, in terms of there being a new, potentially really good first-person shooter for Wii, I think it's great. It's what they need. And, you know, it's an exclusive, so they can really focus on the controls and, you know, Wii-specific features and maybe work on the online multiplayer and, like, make it good. That would be nice. but it's not really going to be GoldenEye.
And even if it were, I mean, you know, unless it's just going to be the whole stick would be, well, we're bringing back split screen multiplayer or whatever.
I'm sure they'll do that.
You know, but haven't we all moved on at this point from GoldenEye?
Well, no, not everybody. I mean, there's a market, especially on Wii. There's a market for people who want split screen multiplayer. That's why the Conduit 2 is going to have it. But again, that alone is not enough.
Yeah, I could see the multiplayer part, but the rest of it, I just...
I just don't feel like that game's going to be all that important in the grand scheme. Well, I didn't want to say that, but it's not likely. Let's put it that way.
James, you're going to review it anyway, so
I am going to dodge that game like a sack full of the plague.
Well, let's widen it out a bit more to some of the other the third party stuff. But first of all, Nintendo has generally sort of set aside some time to highlight certain third party offerings in the past couple of years. Obviously, everyone remembers the Shaun White snowboarding incident.
Do you really want to refer to it as the incident?
Well, it was with the story and Cammy and all that.
Yeah, I know.
The actual Shaun White part was fine. It was the Cammy part that was kind of...
It was the preamble that was toe-curlingly painful. But so we've got more Shaun White that could possibly rear its head again. But what, any other picks for what they might highlight?
I think they'll highlight the Conduit too. I think that would be smart. I think they'll show NBA Jam.
That's a very good
exclusive for them.
The NHL game with the hockey stick thing? Any chance?
Could be.
Why not? Why not bring Gretzky out? You know, the Stanley Cup just ended yesterday, so...
I think Wii is the perfect platform for a Pro Stars video game. You should do that.
What about Epic Mickey? This is,
yes.
Something.
Obviously.
You might think would dovetail well with Nintendo.
I'm not sure... I mean, obviously, they can't bring out Mickey to demo that game, so...
Can they bring out Al Michaels? Because he was part of the trade.
They can bring out Warren Spector. I think that will get a lot
that
of...
That would be smart.
A lot of people... That'll get a lot of people's attention, because that guy's got real cred. So they bring him out, and he kind of gives the short version of the story behind Epic Mickey and does the demo. That would be smart.
Then they're going to do, Reggie's going to be like, yep, see, we still have third parties, woo! And they're going to show, like, sizzle reel.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, I'm sure we'll probably see a few moments of Black Ops on Wii, and, you know, some things that have some name recognition in a brief montage.
Yeah, what to me makes the difference is how much of their own stuff that they've only given our Japanese announcement for, they show, determines how much third party they feel the need to show.
Okay, so you'd say there's a sort of competition for filler between
like Monado versus whatever third party game they're going
to
show.
They would do well to show at least one of those games for the American audience.
I mean, Xenoblade's out in Japan now, so definitely that's done. They've got...
Yeah, I mean, but that all comes down to if they even plan to release it, is the question.
And of course, Last Story as well, the Sakaguchi game.
That'll be there.
But do you have two? I mean, is there room for two JRPGs sort of sponsored by Nintendo?
The last story would trump that every time.
I agree. In terms of selling it to the press conference audience, having Sakaguchi there,
or at least
name-dropping him, goes over a lot better than showing Monado or Xenoblade, as it's called.
And
now,
there's some kind of precedent that they might be getting ready to really blow the door off this game, because they've been basically leaking out information in issues of Famitsu for the last 3 months.
Yeah, they've been dripping it out with concept art and all this sort of stuff. So maybe it could be the first time you see it up close, but I think TGS also...
Because
that's its more natural home, obviously.
You're totally right with TGS, though. If they show anything, it'll be part of the scissor reel. This is not the audience for that.
Yeah.
And that's why it's kind of a substitute or complement, potentially, to the third-party kind of stuff that would be the same way.
It's almost impossible to demo an RPG at a press conference.
No, precisely. All you can do is just show images, basically.
Yeah, and talking points. But one thing that I would ask is, are we going to see a change in third-party output on Wii, from the point of view that you do have moving the tile now? So do we have more cross-platform motion games? Do we see people actually migrate development away from the Wii, away from the specter of Nintendo gobbling up everyone's money, and actually get less support for Wii at this point because of moving the tile? How do you see that one breaking down?
I say this, now you can easily have ports. They'll just dumb it down for Wii. It'll be the same game on Move.
Move, certainly. I mean, it's very easy.
It just
easy
makes
to
it easy.
That,
like, the control scheme's the same. Natal, I don't see...
Whereas Aragorn's Quest is already in that category, isn't it?
EA Sports Active 2.0 as well.
Yeah.
Which could vary... After the huge sales of Sports Active, that could be... the sequel could be a pretty big showcase in Nintendo's press conference.
But the question I have for that, though, is... Where do the demographics overlap? I mean, are they really going to be able to sell carnival games on the PS3?
Sure.
Is it going to be a big seller there like it did for the Wii? Or...
Well, I mean, at this point, carnival games wouldn't sell on Wii if it was released today.
Times have changed. I mean,
Just Dance and things have changed a little bit now.
I just think, well, I suppose the real interesting part now is that you've got to a situation where the Wii... And people have said this, I think it was a comment from Namco Bandai expressing this about the Wii and the DS, that you've got to a situation where they're so flooded with software, much of it is bad, that people can't really effectively, the average consumer on those platforms can't discern the quality of the software unless it's a Nintendo published game, and then they have faith in it, and that's killing the third parties on those systems.
So you're saying like Zoo Games is ruining the party for everyone?
Possibly.
They're not helping.
Therefore, that perhaps the different environments of PS3 and the 360 and Natal would be more attractive, because on the one hand you might be able to appeal to a broader audience because it does have motion control, but on the other hand it isn't going to be flooded with the cheapest stuff imaginable because it is still harder to develop for. And then at the same time you haven't got Nintendo just being this dominant force that everyone looks to in the marketplace. So the point I make is, obviously third party support for Wii has been weak as it is.
It's not getting better.
Could the Move and Natal have a disproportionately negative effect on third-party support for Wii?
No. I think there's going to be ports, and that'll be about it. Third parties have realized what they've realized again and again on Nintendo systems, that it's really hard to make money on Nintendo systems.
And they'll probably find the same thing about Move and Natal after the initial onslaught of whatever.
I think the really... only effective way to make a lot of money on a Nintendo system is if you have basically Nintendo as its pusher. I mean, they really are the pusher for any game that does well, even if it's not theirs.
Yeah, we've seen obviously with Monster Hunter, they've gone to some considerable effort, and that seems to have yielded some gains. It's sold pretty well to begin with in America.
I mean, there's only so many people whom they can grant their
yeah, there's only so much sort of marketing bandwidth that they have, and that's not going to extend to very many of their partners.
I guess my point is that I think most of the stuff that companies are releasing for Move and Natal, or that they're going to be showing at E3, are things that they've kind of already been there and done that on Wii. So I don't know that they're really taking anything from Wii. I think it's just kind of, it feels more like those other systems are kind of getting the leftovers from Wii. I think most of the third parties have either moved on, they've either learned how to do it properly on Wii, or they've just given up.
So it's an interesting point in the life cycle of this. So obviously, you know, we are seeing a time now where the other two systems, the HD consoles, are kind of renewing themselves. Obviously, Xbox has been on the market for 5 years now, and the PS3 is enjoying a renaissance with the price cuts and all that sort of thing. So I suppose the last thing is just that, you know, is there any way you could see of Nintendo actually doing a similar thing with the Wii? Could we have a sort of a DSi type product involving the Wii, in terms of maybe put in some, you know, relatively sort of trivial new features, put it in a slightly different sort of package, and then ultimately come out with a somewhat better profit margin that reflects the current conditions in the currency markets compared to what we've seen recently with all the price drops, because they are getting squeezed a bit now in the price area.
Well, especially since the arcade is the same price, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I think you could very likely see a price drop for Wii this holiday season.
Another.
Down to $150. I think right now, you know, the new bundle is a pretty good deal. So yeah, they don't have to do it right off the bat. But if sales don't pick up, it might be wise for them to do that. But in terms of releasing a DSi thing, I think it makes less sense on the console end than it does on handheld. I didn't think it made a whole lot of sense on the handheld market, but it makes less in the console.
So, I mean, it's the kind of thing they've done with portables a number of times in terms of you're jazzing it up a little bit and getting a sales spike, but it hasn't happened with consoles, even to the extent of like...
And the thing is, they got the Wii right the first time, so they don't really need to do that, and I don't think there's a whole lot of money for them to be made on slightly revamping the Wii. I don't think that's going to do it. So it is possible they could, you know, kind of redesign the system internally like Microsoft did with the new Xbox experience. There could be some kind of major firmware update. It's not really Nintendo's style, but it is a way to, as you say, rejuvenate the system without really spending all that much money or fragmenting the audience.
I think it'll be on services. I think you're totally right. Even if, okay, so maybe I'm wrong on Retro doing it. You know, I don't know what Retro's doing, but like, I think services are going to come into play somehow.
I agree with you on that front, Billy. If you take the Retro part out, I agree with you.
And furthermore, I mean, we discussed last time, two episodes ago, about the idea that the 3DS was really going to have a much more significant online and robust online component than before. And it would kind of make sense, even though, you know, it is a separate platform, that if they are going to have this kind of revolution there, that there would be a sort of trickle-down effect on Wii, and that we might see, you know, some new online infrastructure there as well to build complementarity between the two platforms.
Yes, and at the very least, they're going to update the Wii so that it's more compatible with 3DS, because, you know, the 3DS didn't exist when Wii came out. So, and there will be some kind of connectivity there. It's just, that's a fact. I don't know what it'll be. It may not be any more than what you already have with DS.
Which isn't much.
But they're going to have to update the Wii so it works with 3DS. They might as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think how much they throw behind it really is determined by how much longer they intend to go on the Wii. I mean, it'll be, this is its fourth year now?
Mm.
It's the fifth year at E3.
Yeah, I don't see it going past 6 years.
I agree.
It's got to be getting close to when they start saying, do we start moving away from this, or do we decide to devote a significant resources to rejuvenate it?
Well, do any of us actually expect to hear anything about a successor to the Wii this year at E3? I don't expect to hear them tease.
I think it would dilute from the 3DS as well.
Yeah,
I think.
Exactly. If they weren't launching the 3DS at this E3, I would say yes. But since they are, I'm going to say no, because they are going to have to support three platforms during the press conference.
Yeah.
At least to some varying degree. You wouldn't really want to mention a fourth to make it even more nightmarish scenario.
Yeah, and in just in terms of a redesign, I mean, the PS3 needed a redesign really bad. The Xbox still needs one and maybe is going to get one, but the Wii doesn't. They got it right the first time. I mean, most of the things that I would want to fix about the Wii can be done internally, just like Billy said, with the services, and I think that is the most likely scenario. I don't really see them releasing a new version of Wii that does the same stuff but looks a little different.
Well, I suppose we'll close out this particular part of this final part of the preview just with some quick fire. Anything you want to single out on any platform as being, or just a general theme or storyline of the show that you're particularly anticipating over everything else? So James, I'll start with you.
I think, like everybody here, that there's that kind of what the hell is really going on with the 3DS kind of mentality, because it's still so amorphous, even though
it's just discovering what it really is. It
just seems so abstract even now, even though in a week I'll have already been playing it. Or at least I've seen it for 3 days.
Yeah, a couple of days by the time this comes out. Johnny, you got one thing that you are most anticipating?
One thing. Aside from playing Metroid and Zelda, which I know I'm going to be doing, and seeing 3DS, obviously, I'm extremely curious about Epic Mickey. I'm not that big of a Mickey fan, but I do, you know, that concept art that they originally showed was mind-blowing. I thought that's some of the coolest stuff I've ever seen. So if they come out and show a new version of that that looks more like that stuff, and the gameplay is there to back it up, because I don't really have a good grasp on how that game plays. I know there was a magazine feature last year about it, but I didn't get a real strong sense of what you're actually doing in that game. So if it turns out to look really cool, I could end up being pretty hyped about that game. But otherwise, it's Retro. I want to see what the hell Retro is doing. That's probably the main story of the show for me right now.
All right, and Billy, your most anticipated stuff?
I was never a really big into the whole motion control deal to begin with. It was fun for a while, but like...
So it could be quite a miserable E3 for you.
I'm just kind of...
Do you like 3D, Billy? Because you might have to.
I do like 3D.
You might have to learn to like it.
Oh, I'm kind of really surprised by the amount of cachet you guys think Retro has, because like, yes, I loved...
Commercially, I'm very skeptical about that.
No, commercially, I don't think people have really care. Like, they're going to be like, oh, this is the new game from Retro. Everybody's going to be like, who?
I care about, for me, does it suit me? Even Metroid Prime 2 and 3 weren't really great sellers. So in terms of that cachet, but in terms of their credibility with me, in terms of them making something for the Wii that I give a fuck about, I'm extremely excited.
I'd love to see games on the Wii that make me dust off my Wii more often than I have in the past. Like, I want to know why I should still care.
Well, like, games like Galaxy 2 just kind of, like, take a shit over everything else on the system, don't they? I mean, not just in terms of the quality, but in terms of how much there is to that game.
Yeah.
And how much depth and how much gameplay is packed into that, how many great ideas. There's almost nothing that can compete with it. And it's like, why aren't there more Wii games like this? It's just sad.
You know,
really,
and it just
sad.
It makes me nervous when they pull the same crap that they've done in the last couple of years, where they had all these games for first quarter and second quarter, and then they start spreading them out again. That means I don't know what else they have. So, you know, I'm hoping that they really, instead of just Wii Party, you know, I'm not a party game guy. Like, I'm just kind of over that, you know. So Zelda is the one I'm waiting for, to be honest.
Zelda.
Like, that is the one. I love the 3D Zeldas. I'm not as much of a portable Zelda guy, like Wind Waker, Twilight Princess, you know, Ocarina of Time, like that sort of thing. Like, bring it. Like, that's what I want to see.
On the console side, it's all about Zelda for me. I can't wait to see if it's really going to be different. And my biggest wish for it, really, but more than the structure or the interface, is can they do a good overworld in 3D? Because
right.
they haven't really done it yet, for my money. Certainly, Twilight Princess I thought was the best one yet, but still not really getting into that same area as the old 2D ones did. I'm kind of quite skeptical that they will be able to achieve that, or that they'll even prioritize achieving that. Yeah. But that's what I would love to see, personally. And so that's going to close out this segment.
All right. Thanks for helping out with all that, Greg. And now we're going to take another break and come back and wrap up the show with some mail. See you later. Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
First up this week is a review from Zach Miller of Dementium 2 for DS, where he gives his opinion on the Renegade Kid developed sequel, pointing out what has improved since the original, which he also reviewed.
Carl Castaneda gives us another dose of his mailbag this week. He answers questions about Eternal Darkness, Progressive Scan GameCube games on the Wii, Player's Choice titles, and finds time to stroke his ego regarding the mailbag.
Yes, once again, lots of funny little cartoons, and a surprise appearance by British news anchor Jeremy Paxman. So if you can figure out why he's there, you're a better man than I am. And also, in the review section this week, we have Spectral Force Genesis for DS. Matthew takes a look at this strategy sim hybrid and finds it is a niche game from Japan that probably should have stayed there. Find out why in his review.
And stay tuned in 2 weeks where I'm playing it for new business. And lastly, Neil has a special for his developer spotlight on Taurus Games. We take a look at their thoughts on moving from being a developer of licensed IPs to creating original IPs.
Well, that's going to do it for this week on Now Playing, so check it all out at NintendoWorldReport.com. Welcome back to our final segment for this very 11th hour E3 podcast. Unfortunately, Billy and Johnny couldn't join us for this final part of the show. Billy has a very busy schedule, as you might imagine, with EGM, and Johnny is doing something quite exciting for the podcast that I'm sure you'll be hearing about. But for now, we have some pre-E3 listener mail to get through. And the first one is James, naturally, as you're the only other person here.
It's just the two of us. So Jason writes, I think the 3DS will have a single screen. I am wondering, though, if it will have touch. What are your thoughts?
Tricky one, this.
I
am relatively confident that it will have two screens, and not just because there was that sort of bungled filing where we actually got to see what appears to be a 3DS motherboard with two screens. But what was really interesting about that was the fact that you had the one, apparently one screen that was going to be 3D and have a wider aspect ratio.
Yes, the top screen.
And then the lower screen would be more like the DS screens that we currently have. I think that's kind of weird, making them asymmetric in that way.
It might have just been a thing with the prototype, because that device was made for the FCC.
Yeah.
Which, if you're not familiar with all the alphabet soup of American groups, yeah, they regulate everything from what we can show on television, which is to say, no boobs, no swear words before 9 p.m.
And certainly no covered Janet Jackson nipples.
Exactly. And they also regulate what frequencies things can broadcast on. And
which
they
was why it was the wireless tech in it. Yeah.
And they have to test every, or at least certify the test for every device that's sold in America, that it won't interfere on frequencies that are reserved. So it may well have been that prototype doesn't necessarily have final screens on it. So it may have only had one big screen and one small screen, because they only needed one big screen for the sake of the demonstration. Or maybe it will have asymmetric screen sizes. I mean, who knows? We know nothing about
it. No, we are very much in the dark, but that was interesting to see.
We do know one thing, though. And that is that it will have a freaking touchscreen, because it's backwards compatible with the DS.
The dual screen and the touchscreen aspects of the DS have gone on to become really defining aspects of the experience of playing DS, and there's no way that you wouldn't have those as parts of the 3DS, so, as much as they're going to try and build on the success of that brand.
So the only way that this could even possibly not have two screens is if it had one really tall screen.
It was essentially a combined screen, which, I mean, there was some talk early on about the success of DS, at least bringing them closer together, not literally being one continuous screen.
But if you did that, it would be extremely hard to make it portable. You either have to make the screen rotate so you could fold it down, at which point you've built the Transformers of video game systems.
I mean, so one last thing about the screens is what we just one more sort of confirmation that it's going to be the sharp parallax barrier stuff, is when they showed that off shortly after Nintendo announced the 3DS, it was confirmed, I believe, that the 3D effect would work even if you held it either like in a portrait or landscape orientation. So basically you could have a 3D game on 3DS with the DS being held book style, which, you know, seems like Nintendo likes to do that for certain games.
Right.
So, I mean, that would be a very useful thing, capability to have in a 3D screen on a Nintendo portable. So, yeah, I think we can be pretty certain that's the kind of tech that they're using.
So we're getting Brain Age 3D is what you're telling us.
Well, I mean, why wouldn't that happen at some point? I mean,
because it would make my head hurt more than Brain Age already does.
That's not a bad point. All right, we'll move on to the next bit of listener mail here. This is Shaman from Dartmouth in Nova Scotia. And he writes, I have three predictions for E3. Number one, Zelda Wii gets the Sunday before Black Friday slot and will come with Wii Motion Plus bundled at the same price. I presume that's $50 that he means, the same price for a normal game. The reaction to the trailer will make the Twilight Princess reveal look tame. Number two, Golden Sun DS will be announced for September in the Mario & Luigi slot from last year. Number three, despite Natala move going over like a fart in a church, a game involving shooting and or stabbing will cause a majority of journalists to say that Nintendo quote-unquote lost E3. So, yeah, so that's the predictions part of Shaman's email. And then he has three wishes for the Nintendo press conference. Number one, Epic Mickey gets at least a 5-minute gameplay demo. Number two, Virtual Console either gets a guaranteed game a week or a bullet in the head. That's not happening.
That's a bit much.
It's not going to get either of those. Whether you would prefer
that
one
would
or
be
the
a
other.
Very interesting announcement in the middle of the press conference, though, wouldn't it? Oh, by the way, Virtual Console's dead.
We've just realised we haven't been releasing any games for this for a while, so we're going to take it about around the back and shoot it to put it out of its misery.
It's dead. Obviously, Reggie would have to give that presentation with Cammy.
Well, the third wish that Shaymin has for the E3 press conference is, after Cammy embarrasses herself demonstrating Wii Party, Reggie comes out and body slams her, then hits her with a leg drop. This is followed up by the announcement that Lex Level is remaking pro wrestling on the Punch-Out engine.
See, I was hoping he would come out and then arm wrestle her and rip her arm off, because they'd be remaking, was it World Pro Arm Wrestling?
The arm wrestling.
Maybe they'll come out in robot suits and prove they're making Teleroboxer for the 3DS.
I would be shocking. I mean, there is, I think, some capacity to do a bit of a good cop, bad cop routine with Cammy and Reggie in terms of for the Nintendo faithful.
good cop, moronic cop.
It was like, you know, Cammy gets to do the stuff that's not so hot, and then Reggie gets to come in and sort of be seen as taking out the trash. Or I doubt there will be any physical violence.
I do not think that would put more smiles on more faces if Reggie came out and body slammed
it would put
her.
A bigger smile on your face. I don't think it would necessarily
I'd be mortified. I'm pretty sure that my medical training is not sufficient to handle a large man body slamming a frail looking woman. So to give one reaction to the prediction, because we've done a lot of predicting in this episode. Doesn't the Sunday before Black Friday feel a little late for a Nintendo big title? Don't they usually come kind of early?
The problem is American dates I'm not quite so good on, in terms of the specific relationship to Black Friday, because obviously that's a whole Thanksgiving thing that we don't have.
I feel like they come early November, because Black Friday is late November.
But, I suppose the bottom line is that it's going to be the big holiday title, and I obviously agree with that. And certainly, I think the Golden Sun thing, that makes plenty of sense.
Yeah, they would almost have to have been developing the Western release versions of that in parallel, though, which it's not like it's not unlikely that.
You make a good point, because, there has been a pretty significant lag with a lot of stuff with DS.
Mario and Luigi.
Mario and Luigi was very significant. Even stuff like Picross 3D that has no significant localization. So this would be different in that regard, you're right. But considering that the big blowout reveal of it last year, that's overstating it.
The big 30-second reveal?
The fact that they actually made a point of this game exists, and the first time it happened was at E3, suggests that this is something of a more Western-oriented approach to this game in general. And
I wrote on the site about a month ago that GameSpot, which is...
You mean Stop.
Stop, yes. I know. I screw up in my head all the time. GameStop is already advertising the game in their stores, so... And they had promotional video that I have not seen before, so obviously there's only one source for that, and it's not, you know... Google.
Yeah. And September, not that far away at this point.
Yeah. I don't know what is the big title for E3 this year. I mean, last year, it was kind of amorphous. What was the big game? There wasn't a game, I think, that came out of that E3 that was like, this is the game of this E3. But I think Nintendo has the best prospect for really coming out.
Well, I suppose the one thing I want to ask about this predictions here is just the idea, can Zelda on Wii now really make the kind of impact that Twilight Princess trailer did in 2004?
Is that the first trailer with the music from
Conan?
Yeah, is that the one he's talking about?
I assume so.
Well, I think that trailer was such a tease trailer. I mean,
it was, but I mean the impact was undeniable. You know, it was sort of seen as like redemption for 2003 and the connectivity stuff, and also in some quarters redemption for Wind Waker, that people didn't like the way it looked. And
little did we know that this game would make two more E3s before it finally came out.
True, this was, you know, the real Zelda was back, and also, of course, you know, it did look quite pretty for a game at the time.
Yeah, it did, and
you know, that was pretty much cutting edge at the time, whereas, I mean, nothing on the Wii can make that kind of immediate visual impact now, so if people are going to be really impressed with Zelda, I think it's going to be because they've played it on the show floor with Motion Plus, and it seems really, like it's really going to work, rather than the trailer making such an impression. I just can't see what they can show in a trailer that's going to blow people away.
I mean, the thing about that trailer was, A, it was really, really mysterious because nobody played the game. I mean, the game wasn't there.
No,
I mean,
that was not.
Basically all that existed of that game at that point was that trailer. But that trailer looked much more like an action game than a traditional
Zelda
game.
It was very cinematic. You know, it was like Link on horseback.
It was like Link was going out into a battle, basically, and not just a fight with some monsters, but that he was going to go out and basically he was headed off to war.
Yeah, it was very cinematic, much more so than obviously the regular sort of in-game action ever could be.
Yeah, I mean, and the game itself wasn't as action-y as that trailer would have led you to believe.
No, I mean, it's a Zelda game. I mean, you wouldn't have it so either,
Right.
But at the same time, when you're cutting a trailer together, you're not going to sort of have someone...
Block puzzles.
You're kind of looking, just Link standing still as the person goes, now, what? How am I going to solve this?
but I mean, I think the cinematicness of it, the heavy action emphasis of the trailer, and the fact that the game itself was still pretty mysterious.
I just think if you did the same thing now, if that's what they're going to, in terms of a trailer, what they're going to show of the new Wii Zelda, same sort of stuff, right? Dramatic, cinematic music, cut together a bunch of kind of cutscene stuff, and, sort of little flash, quick sort of abrupt flashes of gameplay. I mean, that might well be cool and everything, but you can't repeat that impact from 2004.
No, and because people will be expecting to play that game.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing. It's going to be, okay, you've seen it, now go and play it. Sure.
Right. I mean,
we're not guaranteed of that, but I think we're all expecting it.
Yeah, and if it's not there playable, and the trailer is all we have to come away with,
people
that
will be disappointed.
That will be the impression, is that nobody fucking played this game.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, it's even more so because there won't be that day of E3s of old where there's that, all right, we've seen Nintendo's press conference, now we wait.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally, what's going to happen is, the seven of us are going to go watch Nintendo's press conference, and then we're going to walk across the pavilion, which is like 50 steps, over to the convention center, and we're going to go in.
Yeah.
I might not even have enough time to make it to the media room. It won't have time to get that trailer that gets its buzz going online, because impressions are going to hit maybe 2 hours after that trailer.
That's what we'll all be waiting for. So, yeah, I mean, I agree. It's going to be about the gameplay. We have another Zelda question, James, so I want to...
Okay. Antonio from Mexico writes, I'm a long-time fan since episode 29 and sent 2 emails and have been ignored twice. To be fair, Antonio, when I was just listening to the show, I sent 4 emails, 1 got picked up, and I got mocked by Carl. So...
No.
So, I feel your pain. And also, Carl's a bastard. Anyway, back to your question. On the Zelda voice acting issue, I can't believe no one suggested this. What about a narrator? After all, it is a legend, the old Legend of Zelda. You could have a narrator, someone who in the story was there with Link, think Navi, and she or he does the majority of the voice acting. That way, Link could stay silent while the narrator could fill us in about what happened and what Link was feeling.
Yeah, interesting idea. I mean, I think, to be honest, probably more plausible from a voice acting point of view than having it fully voice acted, in the sense that it gives you an out in terms of just like not having to have all the characters voice acted or keeping
Links on.
It just gives you the opportunity to kind of be very selective about how you deploy voice acting while still bringing it in. But I'm not sure, it could come off as really cheesy and take
definitely.
You out if it's done poorly. So there is still a very significant risk of it kind of spoiling things if done badly.
Well, you would almost have to restructure the events of the game episodically. So there's clear points where the narrator should inject into the story.
Kind of an overlays of a transition. Like, okay, so the events would be kind of discontinuous, and then it'd be like, okay, and so then this happened, and now we're here.
Because it's the narrator's job to fill in those sort of incongruities between where one part ends and the next part begins.
I mean, it might actually help them with advancing the story to some extent if you did that. It's a little bit of sleight of hand of saying, okay, well, now we're just going to jump to this point and we don't have to kind of rationalize that with some gameplay stuff that kind of just bridges the gap.
right? I mean, it could be something as simple as just quick segments between dungeons. So maybe Link doesn't have to go to all 8 dungeons on one trip. Maybe he goes back home.
Yeah. If you wanted to kind of build in a more organic sense the story, a sort of passage of time or something like that, you know, it reminds me of the fact that in Lord of the Rings, like in the book, Frodo has the ring for like more than a decade before he decides to set out from Hobbiton.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just
hanging around for a while.
To be fair, in the film adaptation, they did not have a narrator saying, and then Frodo hung about for a while before he decided to go to Mordor.
And then 10 years later, he decides, you know, just get rid of this thing. You know, it's kind of funny that, I mean, the word legend is in the title. I mean, implicitly, this is all being told retroactively. And yet
something's being passed down. And you know, some people talk about it in terms of some of the continuity issues with Zelda is the idea, well, it's kind of like different versions of the same tale. And that's right. Why they don't fit together in one tale, because they're all their own take on the same thing. Right. So yeah, I could see that it does make sense. I just am still skeptical that Nintendo would actually go that far with it.
No, and to be honest, they've only really embraced that once, and that was in Wind Waker. In the opening cinematic, they have that really long segment with the pipe music, which really makes it feel like this is a legend of this culture.
But it was also very clear that this game was following on from a sort of
right.
memorialized account of the Ocarina of Time events.
Right, whereas Majora's Mask is very much not memorialized in any way.
Yeah, because it's directly happening afterwards. So,
right.
I mean, it's tricky with Zelda, how you'd approach this sort of thing. I mean, I know I haven't played the game, obviously, but I know you have. Like with Prince of Persia Sands of Time, there was a narration kind of conceit with that, in that the story was being recounted, and they even worked that into, like, with someone
the
dying.
The prince himself was telling the story to Farrah, because basically he had an adventure with her following the conquest of her kingdom by his father and the unleashing of the Sands of Time fucking everything up. But he had ended up going back so far in time, he went back to right before the invasion happened, and he was trying to explain why he was in her bedroom. They set it up very much like an Arabian Nights kind of thing, where he's telling her this story. And at the end, they bring it back to basically him finishing off the story and her being just like, what the hell are you on?
So, I mean, there's precedent for it in that sense as well.
But, and I'm thinking about it, as I mentioned Majora's Mask, it wouldn't work in that game because that's a very insular story. That is Link's personal adventure.
But, I mean, if this is going to, if the new Zelda Wii is going to be the more traditional kind of Zelda story, where it's like, okay, you know, humble beginnings Link, you know, ends up destroying terrible evil Ganon. I could see it working where, you know, the sidekick character, which he often has, like Navi or Midna or, you know, whatever.
Or Tingle.
Tingle.
There's certainly ways this idea could work. It's just...
No, I see merit in it. I think it's more viable than a full-on voice actor. But I just
definitely. And it's also much easier to localize.
Yeah. Absolutely, that is an issue. Well, we'll move on now to the next question, which is Moors from Germany, and he writes, what colour will the 3DS be in? Will Nintendo have a new corporate colour, like purple for Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance and GameCube, and then white for DS and Wii? So that's the first. That's the first part of this email. I think it also bears mentioning, I guess, like silver was kind of the color back when the DS came out, because
it was.
You had a lot of like GBA SP silver that, you know, was the kind of the flagship color for that. And then when the DS came out, which obviously was hardware wise pretty similar to the SP, like the D-pad and.
Well, yeah, I mean, it had the same aesthetic to it as well.
Yeah, exactly. That silver was also the flagship color for that, and then it was only later that they did like the red Mario Kart one and the blue one, and obviously the white one in Japan became quite popular, which kind of foreshadowed where they'd go with the DS Lite.
And they had a bunch, because they had the Nintendogs pink and teal ones.
Yeah, I mean, they got pretty towards the end of the DS Fat's life, they got pretty crazy with it, and I guess you've seen seen that with DS as well, DS Lite as well.
Yeah, well, the same thing happened with the N64 too. I mean, the N64 had about every freaking color you can imagine.
Well, they kind of went with the IMAX style stuff, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. I mean, that could be the first time that Nintendo really ripped off its design cues.
It was so like blatant.
They took a break during the GameCube era and then came back.
They've returned home.
So actually, just go look at what the new iPhone looks like, and then assume they're quickly trying to design it as fast as they can before E3 comes around.
That's the problem, though. The iPad's just a screen. Like, they can't really infer a
color. So that's it.
Maybe
it's just going to be a screen wrapped in a
chrome
frame.
It's going to be all colors.
Maybe they're right. Maybe it is just going to be one screen.
It's going to be like, you know, Saruman, when he's evil in Lord of the Rings, he's Saruman of many colors. So it sort of looks white, but it's actually every color. It's going to be like that.
Oh, okay. Maybe it'll be just wrapped in, like, holographic foil, and as you turn it, you get different colors.
All right, let's address now another part of Moore's letter here. He wants to say, to Carl, I used to be annoyed by your voice and, quote-unquote, anyways, but since you have grown some balls and your voice dropped, you were kind of cool. Reset button is fucking awesome. And so now we have a response from Carl. So, James, if you'd like to read that part.
Yes, I can't make my balls go away, so I'm going to have to use my own voice. The response from Carl is, first of all, thank you for your kind and considerate words concerning reset button. I appreciate that more than you know, and I hope you continue reading the on-site features and listening to the podcast interviews. Secondly, I have to thank you again for making your astute observation in regards to my, quote, balls dropping. Indeed, sir, they did drop into your mother's mouth. Much love, Carl.
Oh, Carl. You see, he had to set you up with all the politeness to put the sex joke at the end.
And by the way, if you go back about 20 minutes or so, you'll notice that I called Carl a bastard. Point proven.
Yeah, well, you have to decide for yourself whether that's actually Carl's response or just some sort of bitter fiction made by James.
I think we can safely assume that it was not an actual historic representation of the facts.
Yeah, well, that certainly we can. Carl and the facts have been estranged for a very long time, as far as I've been able to tell.
I strongly encourage more of our readers to send Carl hate mail about the new format of the mailbag, though.
You don't think there's been enough?
I believe that this is what makes Carl's heart continue to beat every day. And make sure it is creative and hateful. And imagine you are reviewing King of Clubs, because you might be in the very near future.
You brought up an important point to raise before we close out this very unusual episode of RFN, which is that we still have the matter of the big contest for 200. So if you need reminding, the things in play, if you can devise a story to account for the acute
there is much to reckon with the
acute embarrassment that has apparently been felt by the NWR party at PAX East after the drunk cast. If you can write a scenario for that, then you have a chance of winning a signed copy of King of Clubs James Jones, and have the story, the actual events played back on 200. So far, the response has been slight, if very, very offensive. But
excruciatingly offensive.
If we are going to have that story played, we're going to need far more material. So if you haven't done it yet, if you're thinking about it, get off the fence, get writing. You know, it doesn't have to be obscene. There are other ways to explain these things. So.
To be fair, it was a little bit obscene, but it was not nearly as obscene as the results that we have gotten.
You never underestimate the depravity of people's imagination.
Let's dial back the obscenity slightly.
So, yeah, there's that to play for in episode 200, which will obviously be a little while after E3. But there's another thing that I wanted to raise for episode 200 extravaganza, which is that we are planning to do a retrospective special feature on the whole life of the DS itself, the since 2004, since it launched, even before it launched, looking back at the whole story of the platform's development, its incredible success, how it's changed gaming, and how it's changed us as gamers, our experiences with portables, all these sorts of topics that we want to put into a big special for 200. But what would really help us augment that is if we could have a lot of stories from you, the listener. So, you know, it could be your favourite anecdotes, maybe launch day stories, although not the best launch.
Yeah, it was kind of a crappy launch.
But all that sort of thing, maybe, you know, why the DS is special to you, or to your specific games or specific genres that you think it did a lot for, all those sorts of experiences and anecdotes, all that kind of thing that we can use to as part of that special would be wonderful if you can find the time to send those in before 200 in a few weeks' time. Of course, the usual emails and questions and everything also should be addressed to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. We've been getting a really good response recently. Of course, E3 is going to slow things down a little bit, but we will still need many more for the weeks to come.
And I'm sure they'll have plenty of questions following that.
Yeah, should be exciting stuff, of course. I think we've prepared for it amply well now, but it's, as Johnny said earlier, look out for our podcast coming from the team on site during the show itself.
I would encourage, if you have a question about a game, like really early in E3, to send it in, because we might actually be able to talk about it on one of these shows. With people who are there.
Although you are going to be so busy.
Well, I mean, we're going to be recording anyway. Busy. I don't plan on doing work. What are you talking about?
You do. I know you do. Of course, you always look out for our sister podcast, the Radio Trivia Podcast Edition, and the NWR Newscast. And I think that's going to do it for this week. Thanks to James, obviously, for helping me hold down the listener mail fort here.
Survival.
Thanks always, of course, to Johnny for hosting the show. And thanks also to Billy Berghammer for taking some time out from his very busy pre-E3 schedule to be here with us and to be proven wrong very rapidly. Because that is one of the perils of recording so close to E3, is that on the one hand we have access to the most topical information possible, but on the other hand we'll be out of date in about a day.
Yeah, in the reality situation is we might already be completely wrong before this ever even is heard by a single person.
That is going to end the show for this week. Thanks for listening. Hope everyone has a great E3. Follow the site for coverage, and I'll see you in a few weeks. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye. And when we saw the trailer for Other M, everybody that I was with in the reject booth, we all knew that game wasn't going to be playable. Just watching the trailer.
Yeah, there was only sort of vaguely sort of small amounts of sort of implied gameplay stuff, yes, in amongst a hell of a lot of obviously CG cutscenes.
Yeah, and besides having to scrape Zack off the ceiling. I mean, that was basically what we had coming out of there as our enduring memory of that game.
Well, something of Zack's off the ceiling, anyway.
Oh, no.
Don't mind me. I just had the fucking Borg throw up all over me, and there's just cords and cables everywhere.
You are Locutus. So, did I pronounce that right? Locutus, right?
Yeah, that's what he said. Okay, that's what old Patrick Stewart said.
I'd feel so embarrassed if I got that wrong. So...
Really?
Let me.
Are you sure you don't feel embarrassed for getting it right?